Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rich Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. The daughter of Darth Cheney. Oh, she's pulled out. Out of the race. Not running for Senate out in Wyoming, which she wasn't really a resident anyway. But, you know, wanted to bash those gay people. Well, she's out. And good. Glad to see it. Also, unemployment extension still in the wind as the GOP delights in their accomplishment of gridlock. They've got to be thrilled that the weather is keeping some of them from the D.C. offices, because they're not going to do their job anyway, is my view of. So we'll continue to look at that. Also, a week into the new year, and already a number of our wealthy elite have paid all they're going to pay this year into Social Security. And then they're going to say, well, we should cut those benefits. Is it right? Do you think that's the right thing, that you got people who on day one aren't going to have to pay another nickel, another red cent into Social Security? I don't. Scrap the cap, in my view. Also, the ALEC attacks are coming. You remember back in 2011, for longtime listeners of the program, we were in Wisconsin, actually camping out on the floor of the state capitol there in Wisconsin. Basically the epicenter of the seismic shift towards attacking public sector workers and doing it in public by the ALEC folks. Well, they're coming, as I said back then. Get ready, organize, get your boots strapped up, get to the streets, because the attacks are coming. Well, this year, they're coming. And the first bit of it is, let's go after those public sector workers and their unions, because it's just so costly. It costs us so much money to collect dues. So, trust me, I know you haven't heard it yet, but this is the first bit of the attack. And it's basically a direct attack on those workers. Why? I think it's pretty simple. If you destroy the last few people in this country who have power, game over. The rest of us, well, we're screwed. Also going to take your calls, thoughts, comments. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Hope you enjoyed the presentation of our tour over the summer. I got a number of positive responses. People going, wow, I can't believe you did all that. It's an amazing trip, amazing tour. And, you know, we like the fact that we're able to bring that back over the holidays. We, in the Smith household, took off to Florida for 2 weeks to have a little vacation, rest, relax, get ready for the new year and the attacks that are obviously coming. And, you know, it was one of these moments. We got down to Florida, and it's like 60 degrees back at home. I'm going, why'd we leave? Well, they've already canceled school tomorrow for my children because it's going to be so ungodly cold. Couldn't we go now? Just a thought. But, you know, I had a bunch of really interesting moments when we were on vacation. And the one that sticks in my mind, I just couldn't wait to get back to talk about. I'm in the pool with this older guy. We're watching. He's watching his grandkids. I'm watching my kids. And he just out of the blue looks at me and goes, you know, that's my kid over there. He's always working. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what's he do? He's a Wall Street trader. I'm going, really? And he's going, yeah, the old man, the grandfather, the father there, he was a Wall Street trader too. I mean, a low-level guy. I mean, not the upper decision makers. He was one of the little worker bees that runs around, but made a decent living. And he looked at me, goes, you know, back when I was working, because he was probably in his late 70s, he goes, you know, when I was in the middle of my career, you know, having some money, having a good paying job, having a little bit of being somewhat affluent meant you could take a break, meant you could take a vacation and enjoy it with your family and get away. He goes, those days are done. And he looks at me, he goes, you know, where did that go? When did that change? What went wrong? And I just sat there and I'm listening to this guy who, in my view, and I guess it all comes down to what your definition of work is. I, coming from a blue collar, manual labor background, think work is when you're sweating and you're busting your behind and at the end of the day your back aches and you got to take a shower at the end of the day, not at the beginning. That to me is work. And to have this guy go to me, you know, he never stops working. He's always with the, you know, with the phone or the pad or this or that, and he's constantly on call, constantly, you know, pulled in every direction. And the question came up, what went wrong? And I'm sitting there going, you know, I've been asking that question for working people for years now. because my grandpa, my grandfather, who was a truck driver all his life, was able to take vacations, was able to take days off, was able to do a lot of the things that working people today are unable to do. And you've got the people, in my view, the Wall Street people who caused this, asking the question why. What went wrong? And we had this really nice long discussion, a very thoughtful discussion, and he came to the, I didn't, maybe I guided a little bit, but he came up with the idea that it's this hyper-dependence on Wall Street. It's this hyper-dependence on quarterly profits and this whole drive to lower costs and maximize profits. And, of course, then I threw in the neoliberal trade policies, globalization, all of this push where wherever we can get the cheapest labor anywhere in the world, that's where we're going. And then, of course, let's not forget the John Birch Society-type assaults on tax rates. Because he was around when the tax rates were really very high, and he said, you know, the reality was is we got education and roads and infrastructure and all of this stuff that our country needed, and we didn't have debt. And he got it, and he pinpointed. He goes, you know, in my life, you start to look at it, it was the Reagan years. And I'm sitting here going, man, I couldn't have written this script, even if I wanted to. And the guy was just going, you know, I remember, you know, the kids used to have activities in the summers, and the schools had all the sports and all of the vocational things and all of these opportunities, and it was there. And my grandkids who were being saddled with student loan debt, that didn't happen for my kids. It didn't happen for me. It's what our tax dollars paid for. And what he was describing is a completely different world from where we are now. Understand, his generation, who I had to at the end say, well, since you've gone this far, you've got to realize it was your generation that really destroyed things. It was my generation and a little bit older that just kind of kept going along. And, you know, he kind of put his head down. He goes, you know, you got to take ownership sometime. And it's sad. And we left it as, you know, how do we move this back? How do we return to days where we had full employment policies? How do we return to a day when people could take a vacation day or even a vacation? When you're sick, you got to see a doctor. How do we get to that? And, you know, I look at it. Today is a very interesting day to me. You know, somebody who likes to pay attention to history. Today was the day FDR gave his For Freedom speech. And, you know, when I go to the Roosevelt, the FDR monument there, or the memorial there in D.C., right on one of the displays is, you know, his four freedoms. Freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. And it was part of his speech. You know, this idea that we should have the freedom of speech and expression everywhere in the world. This idea that we should have, you know, people should have the freedom to worship however you want. Everywhere in the world, not just here, but everywhere. Freedom from want, which means economic understandings, his words, that will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world. And he goes on, freedom from fear, which in his words, translated into world terms, means a worldwide reduction of armaments. To the point, and such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against its neighbor. You go back and you think about this stuff, you know, we were moving toward a better world, not just a better country, but a better world. And you go and you ask the question, what went wrong? And I can't get that guy's question out of my mind. When did it go wrong? What happened? And here again, it's these moneyed interests. It's this wealth class that we have created through the lowest tax rates in 100 years. It's this system that we've set up that allow the few at the top to benefit wildly. And then through the media structure that they fund, because look, You know, we've tried to grow this program over the years. Good luck. Because huge corporations own 90% of everything we see, hear, and read. Five corporations own 90% of everything we see, hear, and read. Five. And if you don't do it to meet corporate America's specifications, you don't get to do it. If you're not business friendly enough, no one ever hears it. So all we hear is this corporate message. All we hear is, you know, the unemployed, it's their fault. All we hear is, well, those welfare people. Which ones? You mean the ones that welfare, like the Wall Street people? So I think of this conversation I had, and, you know, the next couple of weeks, you know, I'm going to try and find people who are going to help me. What went wrong? How do we get back to it? How do we get back to families being able to be families again? To be able to live maybe on, well, I know it's heresy, but maybe on one income if you choose. How do we make sure that work is rewarded? And I remember when Obama won his first election, my number one hope for him was that he restored the reward of work. Which means if you work 40 hours a week, if you're punching the clock and busting your behind, you can get ahead. You can put a roof over your head. You can put food on the table. You can exist. And maybe, to steal a phrase from the Lawrence textile strike, we want bread, yes, but roses too. Yeah, we want to eat, but it would be nice every once in a while to be able to have something a little bit more than just bare necessities. Maybe take a vacation like I was fortunate to be able to do. Maybe take a day off to go see a kid's play. Maybe just take a day off because. I don't know. And maybe earn enough money that you can do all of those things. To me, that comes with having being a member of a labor union, negotiating for better wages, hours, conditions. But if we have to, legislatively is what's going to have to happen. Do we raise the minimum wage through the legislative process? I say absolutely, and we do it right now. And tonight on the program, we're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, you know, sick time. While in the Pennsylvania legislature, they're trying to make it illegal for towns and boroughs and cities across municipalities across the Commonwealth to pass paid sick day ordinances, we should be doing it nationally. We should be taking away this whole pitting states against one another. To me, it is that simple. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the minimum wage. We'll talk a little bit about where we're going this year in the legislature. I'll right back with Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Sterla. Stick around. You're right back.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. By a narrow 51-49% margin, Boeing International Association of Machinists workers traded defined benefit pensions and wage concessions for the promise of continued jobs in the Puget Sound area. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger said the impact of the agreement extends far beyond IAM members who voted Friday. He said the entire region will benefit for decades to come from the economic activity that goes with the production of the new Boeing 777X aircraft. Boeing new hires, though, will be affected for decades to come by giving up defined benefit pensions. IAM members at Boeing will have greater out-of-pocket health care costs and a 4% raise over 8 years. They will also be paid bonuses of $10,000 and another $5,000 in 2020. IAM District 751 President Tom Robluski said that the entire district leadership had recommended a no vote, but Robluski said that the membership has spoken, and the union's goal now is to fight to ensure that Boeing lives up to its word to keep the jobs in Washington State. American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. is calling on Congress to immediately repeal the cuts to military and civilian federal pensions that were included in the December budget deal. Cox said Congress made a grievous mistake and should not swap the pension cuts for other harmful cuts, like ending Saturday delivery by the post office. President Obama is talking the talk again about seriously tackling income inequality and empowering workers with collective bargaining laws that work like they're supposed to. Workers, including the 2011 Wisconsin Uprising workers, have heard this rhetoric before. But Obama did not put on his comfortable shoes to walk with Wisconsin workers on the protest lines, as he said in his rhetoric, and workers on the front lines of the struggle for labor rights remain skeptical about what the president is really prepared to do for labor. But the White House says that in 2014, the president's agenda and the State of the Union speech later this month will center around income inequality, what Obama is calling the defining challenge of our time.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from Union-owned Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC. I see Equal Opportunity Lender, doing whatever it takes to meet your business lending needs for new construction, remodeling, or building training facilities. Online at bankoflabor.com.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. And we go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't never give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
We just asking that we have this opportunity to have a fair and free election that free from intimidation, free from threats.
Workers Independent News is the only daily national radio newscast focused on workers and their issues. To keep Workers Independent News and the voices of these workers on the air, donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Minimum wage!
You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you? It's like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
Oh, boy, if that isn't the truth. You know, I've heard so many times, well, you know, if we raise the wage, then why don't you just raise it all the way to the top? Because it'll never end.
And I asked the guy the other day, I said, well, what do you think would happen if we took away the minimum wage? How low do you think it would go? And he said, well, I think it would be right where it's at. I go, well, do you think we'll work for soda or we'll work for food? Would be the wage we would get, because I remember during the Depression, we'll work for food was too high of a wage. And I'm a firm believer that we shouldn't even have to have this fight again. Back in 2006, the last time the minimum wage here in Pennsylvania was passed, they should have indexed it. And I'm hoping that this time around, this set of fights will get us to that point. I understand there's a Democratic Policy Committee hearing, I think on Thursday in Philadelphia, to do just this, raise the minimum wage, index it, so this fight stops and we don't see the erosion of the minimum wage by inflation. But that's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Sterla to come talk to us. He's the committee chair there of the Policy Committee. Mike, thanks for taking time for me.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So here we are back again. I mean, 2006, the last time the state raise the minimum wage, and here it's all this time later, inflation has basically eaten away the minimum wage to where we're almost where we started from.
Yeah, and the unfortunate thing is it has, I believe, a negative impact on the economy. Anyone who is working at a minimum wage job takes every penny that they make and reinvests it back in the local economy. They're not going off on vacations to some tropical island somewhere. They're not, buying something overseas. They're investing those dollars with their family in their house, everyday needs here in the state of Pennsylvania. And it's something that, as you pointed out, we have lost ground for those minimum wage workers in terms of their buying power. At the same time, corporations are at their all-time high profit marks ever in the history of the United States.
So are you arguing that that they have the money to pay, that they could pay their workers a little bit more?
Yeah, actually, I heard an economist the other day explain it to say that, they couldn't imagine that you could make a company more profitable than they are right now. It was virtually impossible. And that the only way that you were going to increase total profits was to basically have more sales. The only way you get more sales is if you have more customers. I don't know that somebody who is making, five, six, seven, 10,000 times what their average worker makes in a year is going to buy 10,000 more of those widgets, as opposed to giving each one of those workers a slight increase in pay and letting each one of them buy one of those widgets.
It's interesting that you bring that up because, one of the, and I think this is based clearly on ideological lines. There's a view in this country, like I believe, that if you give workers more money, they're going to have more money in their pocket, they're going to spend it, and you have a snowballing effect, a spiraling up, if you will. The economy will grow as more people spend more money, and there's more activity. On the other side, you have this false belief, in my view, that if you give more tax cuts to these businesses, they're going to then, because they have all this money now, they're going to just hire people for no reason without any demand, and that will do well for the economy. Now, in my view, we've tried the tax cut thing. Taxes are probably at the lowest level they've been at least 50 years. It really hasn't worked, in my view.
Yeah, well, this governor in this state is a prime example. He has done billions of dollars of tax cuts since taking office 3 years ago. And we have languished below the national average in terms of, actually above the national average in terms of unemployment, which is below where we would want to be. Look, I used to be a businessman myself in the private sector. Never did I hire anybody because somebody gave me a tax break. That you hire people because there's a demand for your goods and services.
Yep.
And this notion that if I have to pay my worker an extra dollar an hour, I'll just lay people off. Well, then I won't have anybody to do the work that, there's a demand for my goods and services. So I don't understand the sort of logic behind this. Somebody said the other day that I believe with the proposal that, President Obama has put out there that the average cost of a Big Mac would go up a nickel. I don't know that anybody's going to stopping at McDonald's because the price of a Big Mac went up a nickel, and I'm not sure who's going to lay off somebody there at McDonald's because now, my gosh, they just can't afford to have that person at $10 an hour instead of $7.50 an hour.
Or maybe we should consider, there was a study done not too long ago that, we the taxpayers heavily subsidize McDonald's, something like $7 billion a year we give to the fast food industry to prop up this low-wage economy. Maybe that and all of this, I think it was $7.5 billion in profit McDonald's had. Maybe out of those profits they could pay a little bit. Wouldn't even have to raise the prices. Maybe just have a, not even that much of a smaller profit margin, but maybe
right.
The people who created that profit, maybe they should share in that wealth that they created.
Yeah. I mean, the notion that we are at all-time record profit highs and that you can't retreat from that now, that, somehow making an honest dollar and paying your workers an honest wage is something that's, an abomination here. I think that's a perversion of what, a free economy should be about.
It
really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, the arguments that are made against this. We know that, the government subsidizes not just in terms of directly to, some of those industries, but those workers that are making minimum wage that then fall below the poverty level, we subsidize in terms of, property tax and rent rebates. We subsidize in terms of other lower tax rates. We subsidize a whole host of issues to try and get them to the point where they can survive.
Yeah, food stamps, Medicaid.
Right, all of which comes out of taxpayer dollars. And then we say, see, look at that. Isn't it terrible that we give them all those subsidies? Well, we give them those subsidies because the company that they're working for. Remember, these are working men and women. That's the part I always like to emphasize. These are working men and women. This is not somebody who said, I'm just not willing to do a job. These are people who are willing to go to work every day in spite of the fact that the wages are getting paid aren't enough to feed their family. And then we're saying, yeah, but we got to subsidize it because otherwise their kids don't have any nutrition when they go to school. They don't have clothes to wear when they go to school. They don't have some of the basic needs of life. And we as taxpayers are subsidizing that because the corporation simply says can't afford to pay them anything more than that.
No, they're not worth that.
Right.
That's the other part of this that gets me. You hear people say, well, their skills aren't enough. They're not smart enough, or they don't have the skills, so we shouldn't have to pay them anything. And to me, there's something that there's dignity in any work that you do, and you should be able, in my view, to not just exist, but be able to support yourself and maybe, you know, to steal the old labor saying, bread, yes, but roses, too. Maybe have a day off. Maybe be able to go see your kids' soccer game or whatever. But some dignity.
Yeah, this notion that we expect you to work, we're going to demand that you work, but if you're working and you don't have as many skills as someone else, well, that's a menial job. You don't really deserve our respect. You don't. I don't know. You can't have it both ways, you know?
Yeah, no. But did you see that there was a website that McDonald's had done with, I think it was MasterCard or Visa, but they had done this website to teach their employees how to budget their money. It was beautiful, where they went through and they came up with, okay, you work 40 hours for us, and then, well, you magically got a job for 35 hours somewhere else. That was the only way they could figure out how to make the numbers work, is to give you a full-time job with them and then you go work mostly a full-time job somewhere else, which to me says, okay, you've admitted that the minimum wage should be $15 an hour.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I get this all the time. And people say, why are you for this? I said, I'm for a living wage under any circumstance. I'm for the notion that if you are willing to show up at work every day and do your job, not if you're willing to just show up and not do your job, not if you're willing to show up once in a while, but if you're willing to show up every day and do your job, you should not be penalized in this society. That is not what we are about as Americans.
Yeah, I'm with you. So speaking about showing up and not doing your job, you know, I look at a lot of your friends on the other side of the aisle who gridlock seems to be the name of the game. Can we just not pay them and maybe take that money and move it into some useful needs?
Yeah.
Not going there with me?
I saw one of those pundits on television the other day who said that, you know, given who we have as president, gridlock is probably a good thing. And, you know, when you have people saying that they think getting nothing done is a good thing, you know, I have a real problem with that.
Yeah, I'm with him. So let's talk about this bill. A couple before the holiday, we had Representative Cohen on the program to talk about, I think it's HB 1896. What's it going to do? If we're going to move the minimum wage ahead, what are we looking to do?
Well, you know, move the minimum wage ahead and then also index it for the future. This notion that we have to keep coming back and you know, waiting years and having people, you know, go from making a reasonable wage to watching their dollar lose value every year as they continue to work just doesn't seem to make sense. You know, and I think that, you know, what we're going to try and do with the hearings anyway is to get honest information out there because the people that argue against this, as you pointed out, always jump immediately. If their first thing out of their mouth is, well, if $10 an hour is okay, why not 20? Why not 50? Why not 100? Because nobody believes that that's reasonable. That's why not, you know?
Right.
So, you know, what we're talking about here is something reasonable. If you can't, you know, if you don't think that somebody being able who works 40 plus hours a week to be able to have a reasonable expectation that they will be able to have a warm place to sleep and put food on their table for their family, then I think that's the person that's unreasonable.
I'm with you. A couple other things I wanted to get into. Some of your thoughts of the new year. I understand the lottery privatization is done. That's probably not going to happen, and that to me is a good thing. Do you think that by giving up on the lottery privatization that they move full steam ahead on the liquor stores?
I think they'll come back with that again. And as I understand it, they haven't completely ruled out lottery privatization. They just said the deal that was on the table is off the table.
Okay.
You know, I mean, look, the reality is that this governor, because in most part because of his, you know, tax policies combined with his abysmal performance in terms of, you know, job creation and health care and education, those kind of things, you know, we're going to run, or looking to run, close to $1 billion shortfall in this year's budget.
Wow.
And he's got to come up with that money somewhere. He said he's not going to do any taxes, won't tax Marcellus Shale Reserve, won't do anything along those lines. So, you know, where's he going to come up with this money? You know, the one thing is to make massive cuts again to education and to social services and, you know, those types of things. The other is to sell off assets for the state. You know, hey, we're going to have a yard sale, folks. You know, let's figure out how to put food on the table this month by selling the table that we would put it on. And that's where I think he's at in terms of he's backed himself into a corner. There's not much else to do.
Right. But, you know, I look at this, and again, you know, this whole push towards privatization, which I've yet to find anything that we've privatized that's actually done better for we as a society. I mean, it's done better for a few of the people who benefit from it at the very top, but the rest of us, not so much. And here again, you know, I ask the question, when will we as a society push back against these privatization schemes that seem to benefit a handful, but not the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, there are proposals out there to do modernization of the liquor system if we want to do that in the state of Pennsylvania, which keeps money flowing for the people of Pennsylvania coming into the treasury. You know, it makes things more convenient, if you will, without having the convenience of a liquor store on every corner, which I don't call convenient anymore. I call it pretty scary. And, you know, but again, this governor has basically set down a path of trying to sell off anything that's not nailed down.
It's an absolute shame. And the thing that gets me is he could create jobs almost immediately with accepting the Medicaid expansion money. And I think I think that would help our economy and maybe ease some of our problems as you're putting, what, 10 to 40,000 people to work almost immediately?
Yeah. I mean, that's the one sad thing. We finally, after 3 years in office, convinced him that we needed to do transportation. And he came kicking and screaming. And then, of course, once it was done, claimed that he was there all the way. Here we are with health care, same kind of issue. We'll create jobs. We'll bring dollars into this state. And he has been dragging his feet. I mean, my guess is it's going to take some sort of federal court order to get him to finally implement something, because the proposal that he has, I don't think is going to pass any muster.
No.
At least the other states that have tried anything similar to that, there's two other states that have tried something, were rejected in terms of not meeting the criteria set forth in the Affordable Care Act. And so, you know, as I see it, he's trying to stall for one more year when, in fact, we could be providing health care to half a million people in the state of Pennsylvania and creating jobs in the state of Pennsylvania.
It just amazes me that, but I guess it shouldn't, because you go back and you think of one of the first acts that the governor did in his official capacity was to kick 41,000 low-wage workers off of adult basic, and then the, you know, 88,000 kids off of the CHIP program. So to me, it's not surprising that
right.
he would hold this away from them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You look at it and you say, why wouldn't you do this? Well, if you look at historically what he has done, you wouldn't expect anything less, you know.
Which is why I think it's so important in November that he's a one-term governor and we move and get somebody who, at this point, I don't care. At this point, I really don't care. This guy's got to go. It's just been that bad. Last line of questioning I've got for you, you know, back in 2011, we were in Wisconsin sleeping on the Capitol floor in February as the ALEC attacks took hold there. I said back in 2011 when we broadcast from inside the Capitol saying, hey, what's going on here in Wisconsin's coming to Pennsylvania. You got to be preparing for it. I understand there's a bunch of ALEC legislation, one to make it illegal for local municipalities to pass paid sick days. There's another one I understand that's going to, I guess, make it illegal or make the state stop collecting dues for public sector workers. Again, another one of these really punitive pieces of legislation that ALEC pushes. Is this the time when those attacks are going to come full force?
Well, I think so. I mean, and in part, I think to deflect from the abysmal record. You know, if you look at the education cuts that this governor has done and the additional cuts he's probably going to have to make as a result of this budget, when you look at the people that he's, you know, taken away their health care and a refusal to expand health care, you look at some of the environmental issues, when you look at the lack of job and economic performance in this state, you know, if people talk about that, he's doomed. So he needs to shift the discussion to something else. So you rail about some other issue. And as you point out with some of these ALEC initiatives, I mean, this is really the sort of, you know, amplification of the Citizens United decision, where corporations become people too, and corporations get to draft legislation, and corporations get to determine our public policy, and corporations, I mean, you know, I've sort of tongue-in-cheek said that if this governor could, he would sell the state of Pennsylvania so that we would have a corporate entity running it, and, you know, we would become the citizens of the United Corporation of Pennsylvania.
Now, don't joke. There are cities across the country who have already done that.
Yeah.
Down in Georgia, there's this, I think it's Sandy Springs, that is a corporate city. It's run by a board of directors. It's got a CEO. There's no elected officials, none of that stuff. My fear is that's coming. But I wanted to ask about this dues checkoff elimination that really seems to be very coveted by a number of Republicans. Is it, in your view, really that expensive for the state to collect dues of the union members to make sure that this gets taken care of? Because I've heard it's an onerous expense. It's just too much.
No. I mean, this is one of these red herrings that's out there. You know, to try and say how dare anyone do this. You know, I mean, look, you know, it's not an onerous situation. It's one of those things that somebody's upset that the unions exist at all. And this is a way of trying to stick a hot poker in their eye.
Yeah, and it's a way to attack the workers. And I immediately shot back, well, if it's that expensive, then why do we collect for United Way?
Yeah.
Why do we do it for other charities? In this day and age of electronics, really, it's that expensive? And the answer is no. What this is a direct attack on working, the last few working people in this country who have a voice. To me, it's that simple.
Yeah.
But as always, Mike, it's great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. Pennsylvania State Representative Mike Sterla. Quick break, your thoughts, comments, questions, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
What a Christmas little Bastrop had. It's still a mystery how Santa Claus got it down the chimney, but Bastrop got a present boys dream about. A big honking steel-clad war toy called M-Rap. But Bastrop is not a 6-year-old boy, and an M-Rap is not a toy. Bastrop is a Texas county of some 75,000 people, and MRAP stands for Mine Resistant Ambush Protected. It's a heavily armored military vehicle, one of several versions of war tanks that have become the hot must-have playthings of police departments all across the country. Are the good people of Bastrop facing some imminent terrorist threat that warrants military equipment? No, it's a very pleasant, laid-back place. And while the county is named for a 19th-century land developer from the Netherlands who was wanted for embezzlement in his home country, the relatively few crimes in Bastrop today don't rise above the level of routine police work. Even the sheriff's department, which is the proud owner of the MRAP, says it doesn't have a particular use for the war machine, but, quote, it's here if we need it. Well, yeah, but that same feeble rationale would apply if the county decided to get an atom bomb. You just never know when a big mushroom cloud might come in handy. The Pentagon. which gave the MRAP to Bastrop and our sprawling Department of Homeland Security, are haphazardly spreading war equipment, war techniques, and a war mentality to what are supposed to be our community's peacekeepers and crime solvers. This is Jim Hightower saying, having the technology and the mindset for military actions, local authorities will find excuses to substitute them for honest police work, turning common citizens into suspects and enemies. As a spokesman for the Bastrop Sheriff's Department said of the MRAP, with today's society, there's no way the thing won't be used. How comforting is that? Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. During the break, Randall sent me an email saying, I say, tax the rich in other ways, like a higher income tax rate. Social Security benefits are already capped, so if you averaged $1 million in wages per year, you would still only collect $1,500 a month. So they're talking about capping the Social Security, which, you know, I look, at the end of the day, I'm not so much against, but what ends up happening then is you end up dividing people up and really getting the very well-to-do to then even, I think even more wanting to destroy Social Security. I say you put a maximum on it at the very top, but you got to take that cap off. You've got to make it solvent. And call it, I think, what it is. It's anti-poverty insurance. To me, it's that simple. Anyway, if you got questions or thoughts, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. A little rusty coming back after, it's amazing, after 2 weeks away of actually having a life, you tend to lose what's going on. The mayor of Seattle, interesting bits there. He wants to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And he created a task force back in December of business people, of labor leaders, and tasked them with the idea of coming up with a plan to raise that minimum wage to $15 an hour within 4 months. He wants to be able to send the proposal off to the city council sometime around July, and wanting to get away from not having an election because you just want to get it done. You don't want to go through this whole long process of spending a lot of money and a lot of energy, because, look, at the end of the day, to me, it's my view that government sets the floor. Now, if you remember, there was a socialist, oh my goodness, a socialist, who ran for city council, and newly elected city council person there in Seattle, who ran on the platform that we're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. And she was elected, and she's working to put it on the ballot. To get it moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. But to me, here again, I have this view that the work that you do, I don't care what it is. I don't care if you flip burgers. I don't care if you pick up trash. I don't care if you're a surgeon. You should be able to have a reasonable standard of living. Now, we have made a poverty line. Our government has come up with a federal poverty line. We've said anything under this poverty line is you can't exist in the country, really. Oddly enough, that federal poverty line, around 15, for a family of two, it's about $15,500. If you work 40 hours a week at minimum wage, you make $15,080. So, you know, a mother and a child, which most minimum wage workers are single mothers, who are working to try and make ends meet. They're trying to raise their family. They're the ones who fall into this. That's the biggest group. And it's mind-blowing to me that you know that these are the people who the minimum wage, these are the people who earn the minimum wage, and they're under the poverty level. Now, for me, the adult conversation has to then happen, which is like Mike Sterla said. There are a lot of programs out there that prop up the low-wage workforce. You get Medicaid, you get LIHEAP for your heating assistance, you get some rent assistance maybe. There's a bunch of stuff, Medicaid, food stamps, if you know how to navigate the system. And I've always said, look, it's amazing to me that people can navigate these systems. It's one thing that you go to work 40 hours a week, you bust your behind, and then you've got to work 20, 30 hours a week to try and figure out how to navigate all of these barriers call it who it is. It's pretty much the entire Republican Party and the conservative wing of the Democratic Party who are the ones who have erected these massive barriers. You know, to keep you from the program if you didn't fill out that form right. And I guess we have to have this conversation, which is pretty simple. If we're going to have a low-wage economy, should we not have the systems in place to make sure that people have a reasonable living? Because as this recession, as the Bush collapse moved into recession, and then somewhat what they're calling a recovery, millions of people are still falling behind. Millions of people are scratching and struggling, and there's a point at which it goes, we can't do it anymore. And for me, that's the point where people's heads start ending up on sticks. So from the very pragmatic view, you would think the very well-to-do in the country would say, you know what, we should throw them a crumb. Make sure that people can at least sit at a table that they own in their house and have store brand cheese and macaroni. And do it with some, just a little bit of dignity so that they feel they have the illusion that they're self-sufficient. We do that, or we give people the dignity of the work. On our vacation, a large number of the people that we saw who were staying in the condo that we were staying in were from Sweden, a lot of from Russia. I was surprised about that. But a lot of the European countries, a lot of Scandinavian countries, the people were from. And, you know, the one couple, you know, probably in their mid-20s, mid to late 20s, with the cutest little amazingly blonde children, the whole really blonde family. They were from Sweden, and my son just could not stop talking to them. But here you find out, here guy just started a job about 6 months ago. He's got a month's vacation. Started a job 6 months ago. He's taken a month-long vacation to Florida. That's part of their culture. And, you know, you look at here where we don't quite have that same mentality. Oh, did I mention the guy worked for the city and was a garbage man? Think about that. Now, he had another name for it. I didn't quite grasp that because of the language barrier. But think of the dignity of work. And I've talked to a lot of Europeans to where what you do isn't as important as who you are. And I guess a lot of that is very American. You know, I've had a number of conversations. So what do? Is the first question out of most people's mouths. Because we judge each other based on what job we have. Which seems to me to be just a little bit ridiculous. But I think a conversation has to be had at some point. And maybe it'll be today. Let's take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
In 1897, miners at collieries throughout northeastern Pennsylvania's anthracite coal region had had enough. Conditions were grueling and life was difficult. Miners were frequently cheated out of pay, overcharged for supplies, some they never wanted or received, forced to live in captive company-owned towns, shop at overpriced company-owned stores, even mandated to use the company doctor since fees were deducted automatically from the miner's pay. This, combined with mine owners forcing longer unpaid hours and the anti-immigrant Campbell Act of 1897, taxing mine owners for the use of non-native labor, drove miners to strike. Spontaneously starting in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, workers marched north to get other miners to join in the struggle. Their demands were modest, a 10-cent pay raise and a reduction in the cost of gunpowder. They also wanted the freedom to shop in non-company-owned stores of their choosing and see a doctor not owned by the coal company. As the miners moved northward toward Hazleton, mine owners, determined to crush the workers' protest, sent their company-paid police force and strikebreakers. Local law enforcement was also on the side of mine owners. Luzerne County Sheriff James Martin, a former mine foreman, deputized 102 local men, arming them with Winchester rifles and sidearms. The group of some 400 miners marching peacefully and unarmed in rows of fours moved onward toward Latimer. Stephen Urich, joining the group outside of Hazleton, taking with him the American flag, shouted, "We have nothing to worry about because we have the American flag to protect us." Within hours and a hail of Winchester bullets, Stephen Urich was gunned down in cold blood, his beloved American flag drenched in his blood and the blood of those who lay murdered and wounded. Eyewitnesses said the sheriff and his hired killers mowed the men down like grass. More than 20 men were murdered on that September day and more than 50 were wounded, many shot in the back in labor's forgotten massacre. The sheriff and his murderous band were tried for their part in the Latimer massacre and found not guilty of murdering 20 unarmed peaceful demonstrators. Lest we never forget, or as the wife of a miner whose life was stolen from him told her children, "You can forgive, but you can't forget." This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Trough you stop to feed with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed.
Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So, you know, there are, as I said a second ago, you know, day one, you had a portion of the wealth class in this country who'd already paid in everything that they're going to pay in into Social Security, about $117,000. There are 115 of those folks who did it in one day. In one day. Made $117,000 in one day. Actually, 199 folks who make over $117,000 in one day. Now, I've yet to find anyone who says, yeah, there's somebody worth $117,000 a day. Now, the right wing would have you, well, if they can afford it, if they can get it, then good for them. Because maybe someday I'll be the guy who makes $117,000 in a day. Now, there are 900 of them who did it in 2 days. They make, on average, more than $58,000 a day. Just let that sink in for a second. For me, I go back to it. I can't help but think of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower. And the wealth class that we've allowed to spring up because of a tax code that benefits hoarding, that benefits gluttony, that benefits unmitigated greed. And we as a society tend to go, oh, yeah, maybe we'll be that guy. I remember having an interesting conversation with a friend of mine whose father told him that during World War II, he was proud of the fact that he could pay the 95% tax rate. He's proud of the fact. Because that meant his family was well-to-do. He said they never wanted for anything. In fact, he, as someone who grew up in Britain, went to MIT and paid his way and got a PhD from there. But told me that, you know, his father was proud of the fact. And you go back to ask that question. You know, when did this societal shift happen? To where now we want to emulate the worst in us. Where we wanted to, you know, as on this day back in 1941, you've got FDR saying we want freedom from want. Think about the power of just those words. A sitting United States president saying we should have the freedom from want. That we should be able to have food. That we should be able to get health care. That education should be something that is granted to all. I mean, think about the power of that. And then you go 2 days forward, you know, I think it was 1964, you've got Lyndon Baines Johnson saying, you know what? We're going to have a war on poverty. We're going to make sure that people get education and health care. And we're going to make sure that people can put food on their table. And you know what? I don't care what the radical right wing of this country says. The Great Society worked. It worked well. Poverty was at 19%. It went all the way down to almost 10%. Huge. Huge. And now, thanks to the policies put forth by the Bush-Reagan types, we're heading back to that. Thanks to the consolidation and redistribution of wealth to the very top, we're going right back to it. And who's suffering? Well, our kids are suffering. As well, when I was a kid growing up, I remember those programs that made my life better, that made it possible for me to sit in this chair today and made it possible for me to pay taxes. But I guess it's easy to forget. Sad stuff. Sad, sad stuff. And we put up with it. When will we stop? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with the second hour of the program. If you missed any portion of the program, RickSmithShow.com. That's where you go get the podcast that you're on your smartphone. Right back.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
By a narrow 51-49% margin, Boeing International Association of Machinists workers traded defined benefit pensions and wage concessions for the promise of continued jobs in the Puget Sound area. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger said the impact of the agreement extends far beyond IAM members who voted Friday. He said the entire region will benefit for decades to come from the economic activity that goes with the production of the new Boeing 777X aircraft. Boeing new hires, though, will be affected for decades to come by giving up defined benefit pensions. IAM members at Boeing will have greater out-of-pocket health care costs and a 4% raise over 8 years. They will also be paid bonuses of $10,000 and another $5,000 in 2020. IAM District 751 President Tom Roblewski said that the entire district leadership had recommended a no vote, but Roblewski said that the membership has spoken, and the union's goal now is to fight to ensure that Boeing lives up to its word to keep the jobs in Washington State. American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. is calling on Congress to immediately repeal the cuts to military and civilian federal pensions that were included in the December budget deal. Cox said Congress made a grievous mistake and should not swap the pension cuts for other harmful cuts, like ending Saturday delivery by the post office. President Obama is talking the talk again about seriously tackling income inequality and empowering workers with collective bargaining laws that work like they're supposed to. Workers, including the 2011 Wisconsin Uprising workers, have heard this rhetoric before. But Obama did not put on his comfortable shoes to walk with Wisconsin workers on the protest lines, as he said in his rhetoric, and workers on the front lines of the struggle for labor rights remain skeptical about what the president is really prepared to do for labor. But the White House says that in 2014, the president's agenda and the State of the Union speech later this month will center around income inequality, what Obama is calling the defining challenge of our time.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from Union-Owned Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC. I see Equal Opportunity Lender, doing whatever it takes to meet your business lending needs for new construction, remodeling, or building training facilities. Online at bankoflabor.com.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. And we go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't never give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
We just asking that we have this opportunity to have a fair and free election that free from intimidation, free from threats.
Workers Independent News is the only daily national radio newscast focused on workers and their issues. To keep Workers Independent News and the voices of these workers on the air, donate now at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
What they do, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place, the backstabbers.
Oh, I would say Chris Christie cares about teachers about as much as a dog cares about a fire hydrant, but that's a whole argument for another day on the Christie front. But what I see going on here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. What I see going on is an attack on all public servants, on all public workers, teachers, the people who over this past weekend did a fantastic job of salting and taking care of the roads so that we're safe. And when some idiot flipped his car over, who came out to help them? Yeah, those public workers, those damn, not be damned. Let's steal their pensions while they're out there helping us. There's a great idea. And I understand there's a piece of legislation floating around. The Republicans know they can't pass right to work in this state. Not yet. There's still a lot of money that has to be spent to grease the palms. But they're going to take the first step towards that, this piece of ALEC legislation that's going to say that the state's not going to collect dues for public sector workers because it's too expensive. And there's a whole bunch of other arguments, which is why we've asked Jerry Oleksiak. He's the president, a vice president of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, PSEA.org, their website. Jerry, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
You know, I look at this piece of legislation that I hear is banging around, and maybe you've got a better feel for this. And when I heard it, it just took me back to 2011, going to Wisconsin, where the Koch brother purchased legislature there in Wisconsin, rammed through this assault on collective bargaining and on public sector workers. Part of it was taking away this very, what seems to be very minimal, we're not going to collect dues for you anymore because it's too expensive. I gotta ask the question. One, how many ALEC legislators do we have here in Pennsylvania? How many Koch brother legislators do we have? And two, this idea that it's so expensive seems to me to be ludicrous.
Well, it is ludicrous. It may have cost the money back in the day when we had, the guys with the visors and the arm protectors counting things in school districts, but that was before we had collective bargaining. No, it's not expensive at all. And in fact, the state itself has close to 100 different things that they will take from paychecks, private and otherwise. That you nailed it. I mean, you've said it as well as I could. This is another attempt from the ALEC playbook, from the Koch brothers, from Heritage Foundation, Americans for Prosperity, all these folks. It's a backdoor way to get at right-to-work legislation. Now, we don't. They're calling it paycheck protection. We're calling it paycheck deception.
We call it what you want. I mean, at the end of the day, the bottom line is that this is an assault, not just on your members and on the people affected. It's my view, it's an assault on all workers, because once we allow this to happen to one person, and I got to harken back to the old Knights of Labor adage, an injury to one is a concern of all.
Right.
And I believe that we've got to return to those days to where, you know, when we see one group of workers being exploited and being screwed over, that all of us are affected by it, and all of us should be angry and outraged by it. Or am I missing something?
No, you're exactly right. I think that's we've worked very hard here in Pennsylvania with certainly with the public sector unions through the CLEAR organization, the Coalition of Labor Engaged for Accountable Revenue. It's all the public sector unions, AFSCME and SEIU and UFCW and the Federation, ourselves, firefighters, and you know, there's eight of us all together, and we are working very hard, representing over a million members and their families, to stop this attack on the middle class, to stop this attack on our free speech rights, to stop this attempt to stifle our collective voice. That's really what this is all about. It has nothing to do with the expense of collecting the dues or whether it's the right thing to do and or our political voice. It's all about stopping our attempt, our rights to be that voice for our workers.
Yeah, you know, we just had a conversation with Representative Mike Sterla a moment ago, and he said that, you know, this is one of those major distractions in a budget year where education is going to be under assault, where human services are going to be under assault, because the budget, there's some concerns here, because the governor's given so much money away to these big corporations,
right,
without any real return, without the job creation that we were promised, that they need the shiny thing, they need the they need that thing, you know, like cat food to get the cats all herded together, so that while they're robbing us blind, we're paying attention to something else.
You're right, and robbing us blind would be the attacks on our pensions that we've been fighting since this governor took office and will continue to fight. And again, this is another one of these cute-sounding things, paycheck protection, that, you know, right to work. Who does? Everybody should have a right to work. But what you're getting in reality with this legislation is that attack on the middle class that unions have been fighting for since their inception.
So this idea of paycheck, I can't even say it, paycheck protection, it sounds great. Is there anything in that paycheck protection that would stop wage theft, that would stop the theft of overtime, would stop tipped employees from getting their tips stolen? Anything in there that would actually protect people's paychecks?
The easy answer and the right answer is no. It really is. Just the things we've talked about, an attempt to stifle workers. There's nothing in there that goes after CEOs. There's nothing in there that goes after groups like the like ALEC, for example, who are listed as a charitable organization. I mean, that's something I can barely get out of my mouth. If you think about what these people are really all about and what they're doing, and they're considered a charitable organization. We are probably, unions are among, not among, they are the most democratic organizations in America. Our leaders are, I can speak for our own union, you know, our leaders are elected by members. They decide to join the union or not. They decide up or down on the contract. They're the ones that opt for payroll deduction if they choose to have it. The dues are not used for political activity. It is a smokescreen. Mike Sterla was right. It's just that shiny object that distracts attention from the real issue, which are the cuts to education that we've seen, and the cuts in public services, and the failure to get the revenue that is there for Pennsylvania.
Now, see, I would argue that unions are the ones who actually protect paychecks. Sure. If you've got overtime violations, you're getting screwed out of wages, the company's trying to make you work through your breaks. If you have a contract, if you have someone to stand up and fight for you, that's how you fight back against wage theft. That's how you protect your paycheck. This, not so much.
No, and that's just going to force the union, and it's right now it's just directed at the teachers. It would force us to put our resources into collecting dues instead of fighting that fight that we've talked about. Now, you mentioned before that it's kind of banging around out there. There isn't any real concerted effort that we're seeing now, but it's brewing, and we're watching it very carefully. And we will fight it with everything that we can.
Which is why I think it's important that we talk about this early, because, right. You know, the reality is that there is so much money behind this. There are so many powerful interests. As you pointed out, the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity, Freedom Works, all of this money that the very well-to-do somehow want this what they say is nothing.
Right, and here in Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth Foundation is, they're pushing this as one of their key legislative priorities for the upcoming session. So we're, you can tell by who's backing this sort of thing what the real intention is. There's a great quote from the Brennan Center, that the Brennan Center for Justice looked into this, and a very brief quote: "The transparent motive is not to protect workers, but to silence them by diminishing their collective voice." And if the voice of unions is stifled in Pennsylvania, then we would have Wisconsin and Michigan and other places that are just, you've been there, you've seen what's going on, it's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the follow the money, who benefits from this, and it goes back to, it benefits the very well-to-do, and I always quote my grandfather, because he was right. If a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it.
That's right.
And this is one of those things that it may seem like, well, it's nothing, it's not that big of a deal. The Koch brothers, who are worth $100 million, they wouldn't be putting money into this if it wasn't going to benefit them.
That's correct. And the reality is that in places where this has been passed, in some places it's been ruled unconstitutional. At least three states have the way it's been crafted, it's a clear, in our view, a clear violation of your First Amendment rights to organize and to have that collective voice. So, you're right. Follow the money. Who's going to benefit? Who's going to be the ones gaining, and who's going to be stifled? Who's going to be the ones that are left holding the bag? And that would be unions if this happens.
I think it was Cicero, Cui Bono, benefit to who?
Yeah.
And we know who it benefits. So, then take me back through this, because you look at all of the education cuts that have already happened. Can the system sustain any more cuts? I mean, can the classes get any bigger? Can we have more study halls? I mean, my daughter's in sixth grade. She comes home and goes, "Oh, we had LGI today." Like, what's LGI?
Large group instruction.
Exactly. I'm going, how many kids you got in your class? Oh, there's 100. I'm going, sixth grade? I go, I had university classes that didn't have 100 people in it.
Our districts are struggling. And even the wealthy districts, they're cutting back on the arts and on music and on extracurricular activities and after-school buses and even some curricular areas. And like you said, I think the latest statistics I saw were that over 70% of districts in Pennsylvania have increased class size due to the cuts that they faced under this governor, who is out there running for office claiming that he's the education governor. It's hard to watch sometimes. But
and the more jobs governor. Yeah.
Right.
More
right.
than
that
Wyoming.
Hasn't happened either.
More right. than Wyoming. So I guess that's more than somebody, right?
It's amazing that it's the big lie. The more they put themselves out there telling that lie, the more they expect people to believe it. But I hope and I think with voices like yours and the fight that our union is doing, people are starting to see through this guy. And they know what the reality. I know when he talks about spending more money for, what he's done for education, and that, I know what our teachers are seeing every day. I know what our kids are seeing every day and our communities are seeing every day. And, you raise the question, can we continue? We can't continue to have the world-class system that we were building here in Pennsylvania if we continue to have the kind of cuts that we've seen under this governor.
Yeah, I've been saying for years, Jerry, that, you know, this education, that's the hill that the working class of this country has to die on, because it's been, what, 100 years since we've had compulsory education where kids got the chance. I mean, and the sad reality is it appears to me that we're going backwards. I mean, during the presidential election of 2012, you had Newt Gingrich saying, put the kids in the, make the kids the janitors, have them clean the bathrooms. We're basically saying, yeah, we're gonna take some kids, put them back in the mill.
There's still politicians out there saying that, you know, having them working while they're in school. I mean, we're talking elementary school kids. It is crazy, and you're right. It's a step backward, and more and more, I think our communities are starting to say no. We're not going to have this. This is not what we want. And you know, my fear is that if he does put a little more money into the education in the next budget, and if he does get some kind of victory, whether it's pension or paycheck protection or whatever it is, that he's going to have something to run on, that you know, maybe those numbers are going to creep up, and that's something that really keeps me awake at night, the thought that this man could be possibly reelected would just do untold damage to the.
I got to be honest with you, Jerry. What keeps me awake is the fact that there are some who would think screwing workers and screwing the next generation is somehow a victory.
It boggles the mind. I mean, what I guess it's a victory for them in the short term, but it sure as hell doesn't help the average worker and the average family, the people that are the backbone of America. I don't understand it. And the more I learn about it, the less I understand it. The more you follow people like the Koch brothers or the DeVos family in Michigan, and you see what these people are really doing. It's just astounding.
Yeah, you look at the money they spend, and what's interesting to me is the message is government's bad. We need to destroy government. We it's bad, but they spend hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars to control it. Because right. While they're telling us that government's no good, well, they understand the power.
The power and what the power for evil that it can be, or the power for good that they're trying to stop. It's Americans have to wake up I'm starting to see some signs of that, even within our own membership.
Yeah.
People that supported the governor when he ran the first time. There's a lot of buyer's remorse, a lot of people that are kicking themselves over the vote that they cast.
Now, I go back to today. Today, back in 1941, FDR gave his State of the Union address where he called for the four freedoms. Freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from want, freedom from fear. To make sure that people had education, food on the table. That we need that kind of politic again. We need a generation of people who demand that stuff. I mean, the president didn't make that speech out of the goodness of his heart. He made that because the people were demanding it.
Right. And even you had a Republican president like Eisenhower who said, you know, you'd be a fool to stop people from organizing. There's been a radical shift in this country that has not done any of us any good, and we need to
absolutely
get back to when unions did matter and were creating a strong middle class.
And more importantly, we need to be holding these ALEC legislators accountable. We need to start booting some of the curb. And I'm sure you'll be back to tell us more as this progresses, or at least I hope you'll come back and talk to us.
I love talking to you, and we are keeping an eye on this and a lot of issues as the legislature is getting ready to come back.
Well, we look forward to having you back. Jerry Oleksiak, appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Take
Quick
care.
Break. Right back with your thoughts, questions, comments. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And dig it, Mr. Harlequin Hauler, because I'm going to leave it in the ground. Mr. Tap and dig it, Mr. Harlequin Hauler, Mr. Reagan can supervise the crew. And if they find it too hard, they got the National Guard to fix the bayonets and shovel like fools. He's gonna take a lot longer than 80 short days for this miner to cool on down. This tap can dig it, Mr. Harley can haul it, cause I'm gonna leave it in the ground.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
What a Christmas little Bastrop had. It's still a mystery how Santa Claus got it down the chimney, but Bastrop got a present boys dream about. A big, honking, steel-clad war toy called M-Rap. But Bastrop is not a six-year-old boy, and an M-Rap is not a toy. Bastrop is a Texas county of some 75,000 people, and M-Rap stands for Mine-Resistant Ambush Protected. It's a heavily armored military vehicle, one of several versions of war tanks that have become the hot must-have playthings of police departments all across the country. Are the good people of Bastrop facing some imminent terrorist threat that warrants military equipment? No, it's a very pleasant, laid-back place. And while the county is named for a 19th-century land developer from the Netherlands who was wanted for embezzlement in his home country, the relatively few crimes in Bastrop today don't rise above the level of routine police work. Even the sheriff's department, which is the proud owner of the MRAP, says it doesn't have a particular use for the war machine, but, quote, it's here if we need it. Well, yeah, but that same feeble rationale would apply if the county decided to get an atom bomb. You just never know when a big mushroom cloud might come in handy. The Pentagon, which gave the MRAP to Bastrop and our sprawling Department of Homeland Security, are haphazardly spreading war equipment, war techniques, and a war mentality to what are supposed to be our community's peacekeepers and crime solvers. This is Jim Hightower saying, having the technology and the mindset for military actions, local authorities will find excuses to substitute them for honest police work, turning common citizens into suspects and enemies. As a spokesman for the Bastrop Sheriff's Department said of the MRAP, with today's society, there's no way the thing won't be used. How comforting is that?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
And you know, the sandwich comes in, you touch this, touch this, touch this, go pay the cashier, there's your sandwich. It's amazing.
Ho, 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 it's magic, you know. Never believe it's not so. It's magic.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Our quote of the day comes from Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City. He said, New York has faced financial collapse, and a crime epidemic, terrorist attacks, and natural disasters. But now, in our time, we face a different crisis, an inequality crisis. It's not often the stuff of banner headlines in our daily newspapers. It's a quiet crisis, but one no less pernicious than those who have come before. And you look at this and you go, thank goodness there's somebody, the mayor of New York, saying, we've got a massive crisis. On the level of 9/11, on the level of Hurricane Sandy, on the level of the Bush collapse, we have this crisis. And it's not just New York, it's a global crisis where the handfuls, 199 people on day one, don't have to pay another dime into Social Security. And I remember in 2010, you had the Tea Party people running around going, you want redistribution of wealth? Going, well, yes, please. Like it was when we had a strong, burgeoning middle class. When kids got out of college and weren't saddled with a lifetime of debt. You want to talk about another crisis of our time? What we've done to the younger generation, to me, is criminal. But here's the reality, and I've always said the Great Society did what it was supposed to do and should have done more had we not had the 80s, had we not had Reagan, and had we not had all of the conservative pushback. The reality is it worked, because without government programs, the poverty rate would be nearly twice what it is today. Because right now, the poverty, about 15%. It was, during Johnson's time, 19%. Had dropped, the numbers that I was just looking up, had dropped to about 10%. during the 70s. And then you got into the Reagan years, and it jumped up to 15 and hovered right around there until Clinton took office, where it dropped down because more people had jobs. And then Bush takes office and bang, pops right up. Then you've got the Bush recession, and it skyrockets. Now, if we don't have the programs that gave elasticity to our economy, where we would have had a depression if it weren't for unemployment, if it weren't for food stamps, if it weren't for the social programs put into place by the Great Society, by the New Deal. If those were not in place, depression, another depression. We'd have just been another year on the calendar of depression, another decade. Like the 1880s, like the 1930s, we'd have been right there. So with the programs we've got, we didn't have that hard down that Pat Toomey was asking for. Because when he was asked about the housing bubble, he said, well, we would have had a harder down. Which in layman's term means more people would lose their homes. Your property value would have fallen farther. But this idea that we should be destroying food stamps, we should be destroying unemployment, we should be destroying all of those social safety net programs, to me is just absolutely ludicrous. Without Social Security, without SNAP benefits, without the earned income tax credits, without the things that lift up the bottom, poverty would be nearly 30%. Think about that. Think about the number. So when you go back and think about Mitt Romney, so 47% of those people don't pay any federal taxes. Understand, those were working people who didn't make enough money to pay federal taxes. We should be outraged by that. We should be outraged that we have 15% of our citizens who are living below the poverty line, which I think is artificially low to begin with. Now, understand, this is the richest country in the world. There's more wealth here in this country than anywhere else in the world, by huge amounts. Yet we can't seem to make sure people get education. We can't make sure people get to see a doctor when they're sick. We can't seem to make sure that people can retire with some dignity. Sorry, can't do it. We've got a Congress right now who they left for vacation without passing an extension to unemployment benefits or solving the problem of 1.3 million people immediately not having jobs or benefits. And then another 2 million in the next year who won't have jobs or benefits. Because I haven't seen a jobs bill, have you? I haven't seen any plan to get people back to work. I hear the same old canards. I hear the same old rhetoric. Oh, more tax cuts. We need more money for the wealthy. Sorry, doesn't work. We need to sell off state assets. We need to sell off federal assets. We need to fire sale our stuff. We need to privatize everything. What was interesting is I came across an interesting quote from the New York Times editorial board that talked about privatization. I just thought it was a great editorial. It said, it is legitimate to use contractors when government does not possess the expertise, especially on specific projects, or for services that are tangential to core government functions. But the current practice of contracting out vast swaths of government work indefinitely with little or no attempt to develop the needed technical or managerial expertise within the government or to enforce labor standards has created a bloated federal contractor sector in which the public good is often subservient to profit. It's a nice way of saying very little of what we privatize actually comes through on what we were told it's going to, and I can't find an instance where it's benefited us as a people where we've said, here, private sector, do this because you can only do it. And I point to healthcare.gov, 55 private for-profit corporations, all with their finger in the pot, all saying, oh, we did our part, because our government didn't have the technical expertise through years of assault on government workers. This you can thank our conservative friends for. All of the really bright people, all of the people who had the technical capabilities to do this, were all let go, were all sent away. Mission accomplished. Let's take a quick break. Right back. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. By a narrow 51-49% margin, Boeing International Association of Machinists workers traded defined benefit pensions and wage concessions for the promise of continued jobs in the Puget Sound area. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger said the impact of the agreement extends far beyond IAM members who voted Friday. He said the entire region will benefit for decades to come from the economic activity that goes with the production of the new Boeing 777X aircraft. Boeing new hires, though, will be affected for decades to come by giving up defined benefit pensions. IAM members at Boeing will have greater out-of-pocket health care costs and a 4% raise over 8 years. They will also be paid bonuses of $10,000 and another $5,000 in 2020. IAM District 751 President Tom Roblewski said that the entire district leadership had recommended a no vote, but Roblewski said that the membership has spoken and the union's goal now is to fight to ensure that Boeing lives up to its word to keep the jobs in Washington State. American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. is calling on Congress to immediately repeal the cuts to military and civilian federal pensions that were included in the December budget deal. Cox said Congress made a grievous mistake and should not swap the pension cuts for other harmful cuts, like ending Saturday delivery by the post office. President Obama is talking the talk again about seriously tackling income inequality and empowering workers with collective bargaining laws that work like they're supposed to. Workers, including the 2011 Wisconsin Uprising workers, have heard this rhetoric before. But Obama did not put on his comfortable shoes to walk with Wisconsin workers on the protest lines, as he said in his rhetoric, and workers on the front lines of the struggle for labor rights remain skeptical about what the president is really prepared to do for labor. But the White House says that in 2014, the president's agenda and the State of the Union speech later this month will center around income inequality, what Obama is calling the defining challenge of our time.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from Union-Owned Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC. FDIC Equal Opportunity Lender, doing whatever it takes to meet your business lending needs for new construction, remodeling, or building training facilities. Online at bankoflabor.com.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day, and we go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them, but they don't ever give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
We just asking that we have this opportunity to have a fair and free election that free from intimidation, free from threats.
Workers Independent News is the only daily national radio newscast focused on workers and their issues. To keep Workers Independent News and the voices of these workers on the air, donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
The walls came down. They'd all been won. But the walls came down. I don't think there are any Russians. There ain't no Yanks. Just corporate criminals.
Look at all of this money, and the 2012 presidential election, and the whole election cycle, the Koch brothers and their allies all of the, you know, the Freedom Works, the Americans for Prosperity, all of the who's that woman from Wisconsin? Diane Hendricks, I think her name was, the one who got all tingly in the panties asking Scott Walker for, oh, when are we going to pass right to work? And all of these very, very well-to-do that we have, and I shouldn't even say well-to-do, obscenely well-to-do, that we have given so many benefits to, so much wealth we've given to them. They've spent this money wisely. This legislation that seems very minor, like it's paycheck protection. Oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. Why are they spending so much money on it if it's nothing? And like I've been saying, you know, since we laid on the marble floor of the state capitol in Wisconsin, the attacks are coming. Well, they're coming here again this legislative session. But here to talk about that and the ALEC attacks, because there's a bunch of them here, I've got Lisa Graves. She's the executive director of the Center for Media and Democracy. Also, they run the website ALEC Exposed. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You know, I look at this. I look at all this money, $400 million, according to an analysis by the Washington Post and the Center for Responsive Politics. $400 million they spent on, well, we don't believe in government.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible sum. To put that sum in perspective, you know, that's more than John McCain spent in the race for the presidency in 2008, and it's almost as much as the Republican candidate Romney himself and his related campaign efforts spent in 2012. So $400 million is a pretty big sum.
You know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. And I'm looking at $400 million. A rich guy's telling me, we need this Paycheck Protection Act that's going to screw the unions here and screw those people. As how somehow this is good for us. It's amazing to me.
Well, I have to say that this Washington Post article is quite extraordinary, because they really go into detail about the shell game that has been deployed by the Kochs and their allied billionaires or their cronies. And there's an alphabet soup set of limited liability corporations, LLCs, filed in Delaware within the last 2 years that are helping to funnel, you know, cumulatively hundreds of millions of dollars into other groups to run ads in the election. And so you have a real shell corporation sort of shell game going on. I don't think I've seen anything like this outside of a John Grisham novel.
Wow. And, you know, because all those groups we hear about, Americans for Puppies and all of these front groups who, you know, who have a post office box. And it doesn't surprise me that they're all in Delaware. I mean, we've got this huge Delaware loophole where all the profits corporations send to these post office boxes, and all the profits get scrubbed out of their companies so they don't have to pay any taxes here in Pennsylvania. So it's not surprising me that Delaware is a place where the Koch brothers would want to set up shop to do something shady.
Well, I have to say Delaware, you know, is sort of on the race to the bottom of corporate regulation. And so basically what this means is that while the American people were paying attention to the issues in the 2012 election, trying to figure out who to vote for the president and every post for those that voted, meanwhile, $400 million was being spent by an unknown group of people that includes the known people, include the Koch brothers, two of the richest billionaires on the planet. But what's really astonishing about this is that this group, Freedom Partners, which is one of the groups that is at the center of all this, no one even knew that it existed until September of this year. So here's a group that helped funnel nearly $400 million, nearly a half a billion dollars into that election year spending, and no one even knew that it existed. I think that just shows how our democracy is being hijacked by these billionaires, and how they're now deploying their lawyers to create this really intricate scheme of shell corporations to try to shield themselves from you knowing who they really are.
Yeah. This is really, I hear a lot of people talking about, well, you know, the original intent of the Constitution and going back to the founding fathers and the founding principles. were corporations meant to be people with our founders? I mean, I can only assume that the people who founded this country have got to be not just rolling over, but spinning.
Well, you know, the way that corporations have grown over the, over the last century or so is quite extraordinary. I think our founding fathers would be astonished to see what's happened. After all, our founding generation, you know, was part of, or at least some of them were part of the original Boston Tea Party, which was in part about the monopoly on tea imports by one of the first corporations in the world, the British East India Company. And, you know, our country, in essence, was founded in rebellion against the confluence of corporate and monarchical control with, you know, Britain. And so these corporations back in the day, 200 years ago, they had limited charters, which meant that there were very few of them that were allowed to exist because the people of our founding generation knew that corporations could be extremely dangerous with the way they concentrate wealth and spread their power and then work to control and influence the political leaders. Even Adam Smith, who wrote The Wealth of Nations, which has been, you know, obviously one of the people that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, you know, honor like a founding father of their own. Even Adam Smith wrote at length in The Wealth of Nations that the people need to be very distrustful of business leaders in England at the time, because business leaders were even known back then to have interests that were at odds with the interests of ordinary people and would attempt to manipulate the market to their own benefit, to, you know, concentrate their own wealth and control and power. And so, you know, the way corporations have grown in our country would be quite astonishing to our founding fathers. And I think it's something that we as the American people need to get more control over, because they are having an extraordinary influence. Some of these corporations are more powerful than whole countries on this planet in terms of their wealth and the amount of power that they wield.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you really hear about Adam Smith from the right, the invisible hand, no government, no regulation, none of that. So by you saying, and you're absolutely right, he was fearful of it, but that gets lost in the translation of what Adam Smith actually wrote.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I think that Naomi Wolf is the one who pointed out that particular quote in, you know, her book on disaster capitalism and on how the economic crisis caused by some of these, you know, Wall Street titans, you know, is being manipulated to drive these austerity policies that really hurt working Americans across the board of all political parties and of no political party. And yet, at the same time, some of these corporate interests and these CEOs are busy fueling groups like FreedomWorks or Americans for Prosperity, which claim to stand for prosperity, but which, you know, are largely bankrolled by some of these big billionaires to push their agenda, an agenda that, you know, has helped concentrate the wealth in the hands of not just the 1%, but the 0.00001 in this country in a way that has, I think, in lots of ways wrecked the American dream and made it much harder for ordinary people to get a good-paying job with benefits, keep a good-paying job with benefits, not get their retirement ripped off by some corporate maneuver, whether it's through, you know, a bankruptcy or a merger or selling of the company's assets. You know, I think we have a lot of work to do as a nation in Pennsylvania and in other states to, you know, retake our rights, to protect our rights in the interests of our families and our retirement security and our future, to try to ensure that, you know, this country isn't just for the wealthiest 0.001%.
Yeah, I mean, Americans for Prosperity, for their prosperity, yes. The 109.
I call them Americans for Greed, actually. When I'm speaking more candidly, Americans for Prosperity. That's because greed didn't poll well.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were prosperous for the 199 people who on the first day of the year already paid every penny they're going to pay into Social Security for the entire year.
Yeah, wasn't that an amazing article in the Los Angeles Times? It was a fantastic article because it tells the truth. To think that there are that many people in this country who make in 1 hour, or even in 1 day, the maximum amount for taxation for Social Security purposes. What that means is that most Americans had no idea and have no idea that there's a cap on income for purposes of Social Security, because we all pay Social Security into Social Security all year round.
Yep.
from the first day of the year till December 31st. But there's a number of people who make so much in this country that they pay their Social Security taxes on the first day of the year, because they make well over $110,000 a year. They make millions of dollars a year, and so they don't pay in after that first $110,000, $115,000. And I think that cap should be limited. That should be lifted. That cap, you know, if that cap were lifted, we would have prosperity and increases, cost of living increases in that Social Security plan for decades and decades and decades to come.
I'm right there with you. And then the report went on to say there were 900 people on day two who had paid all of their taxes for the entire year, while you and me and all the people listening to this program, because I'm sure the Koch brothers aren't tuned in. I'm sure they've got an agent who's tuned in, somebody they're paying about $30,000 a year. But I'm sure that, you know, they're getting the report. But here again, you got 900 people who in 2 days paid all of it. And you're right. Scrap the cap. And I've had this idea for a long time. Get rid of the cap, lower the rate so that you and me and other people who end up paying it all year long, maybe we can put a little more money in our pocket and help generate some economic activity to get the economy moving. Just a thought.
Well, you know, one of the things that's actually pretty extraordinary is how some of these right-wingers, you know, including the Pete Peterson billionaire, Wall Street billionaire, who's been funding some of these austerity groups like the so-called Fix the Debt Gang, you know, how these guys are pushing for, quote, entitlement reform. They use this word entitlements as a technical word that applies to budgetary matters as if it's a dirty word, as if those are you have some sort of fake sense of entitlement to your Social Security. In fact, every American, including those, you know, 1%, have paid into Social Security. That's our retirement. That's our Social Security. And if that cap were lifted, like you said, if we scrap that cap, we would have, you know, a much healthier Social Security system, not just solvent for the next two decades, but solvent for decades to come. And as you point out, if there were more funds in those funds, then working people might actually be able to pay less in and have a livable retirement. Although I have to say, Social Security as a really important safety net for all of us, given the cost of living, actually doesn't go that far in terms of people's fixed incomes. You know, the cost of prescription drugs, the cost of out-of-pocket medical expenses, you know, the cost of living. And so I actually think that not only do we need to scrap the cap, we need to increase the amount that people are able to get on Social Security that they've paid in order to have a retirement where they don't have to take a part-time job, working for minimum wage.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And I've often said that, you know, we should look at it as anti-poverty insurance, and that the more, if you're at the bottom, you get a little bit more. You're at the top, sorry, you don't need as much. But, you know, I also understand the argument against means testing, but that's a whole other debate for another day. But I wanted to focus more on the Alec thing, because I've allowed this to go a little off.
Because,
no, it's not your fault. It's mine, obviously. These attacks are coming. I mean, there's this paycheck deception thing where they're going to protect our paychecks, protect it from anybody having a voice so that our paychecks get larger. But there's all of this money behind these pieces of legislation. You go back to the Stand Your Ground and the voter suppression stuff, and you go to all of these making paid sick days or paid vacation days illegal for municipalities to pass ordinances to increase those things. All of these, which seem fairly... well, not important pieces of legislation, but they're pushed and funded by people like Koch and people like the ALEC groups. And, you know, I wanted to get a sense of, you know, as you look at this legislation, you know, it's not just Wisconsin, it's not just Ohio, it's not just Pennsylvania, it's nationwide.
Well, that's right. What we discovered when after the whistleblower came to me in 2011 and gave me all of these bills that had been secretly voted on by corporate lobbyists, sitting behind closed doors with our state elected officials, including officials in Pennsylvania and other states, you know, what we discovered was how broad and deep and long-standing this agenda has been to roll back workers' rights, to roll back the ability of Americans to sue corporations and hold them accountable. You know, that set of bills that we analyzed when we launched ALECExposed.org in 2011, you know, it was extraordinary. And those bills, the thing that we discovered that no one, I think, understood was that, in fact, each of those bills, each ALEC bill that popped in your state house there in Pennsylvania or other states has been pre-voted on, literally voted on by corporate lobbyists sitting behind closed doors with politicians, with elected state legislators. Those bills were voted on and debated and amended even in those closed-door ALEC task force meetings often at a fancy resort out of state, where your lawmakers are wined and dined by corporate lobbyists, where their spouses, you know, go to fancy dinners with these corporate lobbyists, where even their kids can have their parents pay a fee to be in what's called Kids Congress, from age 6 months to 17 to hang out with lobbyist kids who are there on what amounts to basically a vacation, a partial vacation or subsidized vacation for these lawmakers up to three times a year at ALEC resorts. And so, you know, you think that when a bill comes up in your state house, that in essence you have a real say in that. And I think you must have a say in it. People must speak out if they have concerns about bills. But in fact, what we've seen in state after state, and certainly Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, and other states, is that a lot of these ALEC lawmakers, they don't care what the people of the state want. They're not interested in people speaking out or standing up or asking for amendments, because those bills have already been pre-cleared, pre-approved, and literally pre-voted on by their corporate benefactors at these ALEC meetings. And we think that's wrong. That's contrary to our system of democracy. And people ought to, you know, be outraged about it, because it's outrageous.
Yeah, and it's this whole package of, and I guess to me it comes down to this mentality that we've been forced with. It's, we need to be more business friendly. I mean, we hear it from every gubernatorial candidate. We hear it from all politics. Well, we need to be more business friendly. We need to encourage job growth. And I'm going, have I missed something here? This idea of business friendly. Okay, I think you should be able to exist. Yes, but I'm not giving you millions of dollars that we should be spending on education so that you can have a trip to the Bahamas. I'm not going to deregulate so that you can not have to worry about having a safe workplace, and well, the guy that works for you dies. I'm sorry, my definition of business friendly is much, much different than what we've been force fed.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, there obviously are a lot of corporations that affect people's lives, and there are some corporations and brands that people feel quite attached to or loyal to. And corporations serve a role in our society, and obviously, small businesses can be. Can be engines for economic growth, but that doesn't mean that they get everything they want. That doesn't mean they don't have to pay their fair share. Too often in this country, a lot of these global corporations aren't paying their fair share. Their tax rate is either zero or a negative, meaning they're not paying taxes like you are. That's one of the reasons why Warren Buffett spoke out. His secretary was paying more taxes than he was, and for goodness sake, some of these companies don't pay any taxes compared to what individuals make. And so the idea that we've got to be even more, quote, friendly to these corporations is sort of appalling. Corporations that want to do business here in our state, you know, ought to be responsible corporate citizens. That means paying their fair share. That means complying with laws that are designed to protect the rights of workers, the safety and health of workers, and ensure that we can have a long and prosperous economy for our families and future generations. Corporations that don't want to ensure that we have those safe workplaces and ensure that our workers are treated fairly, I don't think that they're being real patriots, in my opinion. They're not actually demonstrating their commitment to our American values and to the American dream.
I'm with you. And I think there's got to be that education process and maybe that awakening where people say, you know, enough already.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think there certainly are some responsible business owners out there, both at the national level and the local level. There are a lot of people who are concerned about their community, and they want, to do right by their community. But there are a lot of corporations that are spending an awful lot of money to try to get the laws rejiggered to advance their wish list. And ALEC is a vehicle of that. ALEC is a vehicle where some of the biggest oil companies in the world and coal companies in the world go to hand their wish lists through ALEC to the state legislators, get that bill introduced, cleanse of any reference to the fact that they wrote it, that their corporate lobbyists wrote it, and get it made into law, and often as quickly as possible. And so, you know, if a corporation wants to lobby for a bill, it ought to be upfront about that. It ought to report that lobbying if that's required by the state or Congress. If it wants to support a bill, it ought to have the guts to testify publicly in favor of that bill. You know, obviously there's a lot of lobbying in this country, and that's in some ways a problem, how much influence these lobbyists have with lawmakers, how much access they have to them compared to ordinary people. But even with that amount of influence, what ALEC does is quite extraordinary. It doesn't just give them that influence. It actually gives them a, quote, equal voice and vote. I don't think unelected corporate lobbyists should have has any business voting on my legislation or legislation in my state before the lawmakers who are elected to represent me do. That's really, you know, unbelievable to me, but that's how ALEC operates.
Yeah, and the part that gets me is that we don't know who our ALEC legislators are. They, you know, there have been a number of people who've asked different legislators that you know that the legislation they're proposing was handed to them. Here, there's your legislation. Just put your name on it. And when I was a kid going to school, if you turned in someone else's homework, didn't you get in trouble?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that what we've seen in state after state is how many of these copycat pieces of legislation there are. At one point, we were calling them McBills. They're like a, you know, little corporate bill factory where copycat legislation gets introduced across the states. A lot of these lawmakers, they don't have an original idea. They didn't think of these bills themselves. They were handed to them by ALEC. They were pre-cleared by these corporations. They were voted on by their buddies at these ALEC wine and dine meetings and conferences. We do know some of the ALEC members in Pennsylvania. We know that from a report that one of the progress groups in Pennsylvania did that we help with, that Mike Terzai, the House Majority Leader in the state, is an ALEC member. We know that at least part of his participation in ALEC is paid by state taxpayers. We know that the majority caucus chair, who at the time of this report was Sandra Major, is an ALEC member. That Dick Stevenson, Ronald Marcico, Daryl Metcalf, Robert Robbins, Stuart Greenleaf, and I could go on and on, Matthew Baker, Stephen Barr, Paul Clymer, John Evans, Robert Godshall, Kate Harper, Dick Hess, Ronald Miller, Charles McKilney, Jeffrey Pakola, John Pippi, Harry Reedshaw, and John Evans have been ALEC members. There are more. We've got them on our ALECExposed.org site, but those are some of the leaders in your House and Senate there in the state that we know have been active in ALEC.
And is it bipartisan?
Well, ALEC says it's bipartisan. You know, it's one of those things that is nominally true. We took a close look at 104 of ALEC's leaders. That means their board, the state legislators who are leaders of their task forces, and the state legislators who are the state legislative leaders in each state in the country. And out of 104 legislative leaders when we took this survey, 103 were Republican.
Well, that's bipartisan. Yeah.
So there you have it. I think that, you know, it may change from year to year, but it's probably in that same percent range from the standpoint of the leadership of ALEC. It's like 99%.
That's like I've always been saying. You know, the problems with this country is the entire Republican Party and the very conservative corporate Democrats that basically should be Republicans.
Well, there have been a number of corporate Dems who've been part of ALEC over the years. A number of them dropped out, you know, in this past year. In 2013, there are ALEC legislators or ALEC Dems and ours who have left. Although, the number that left, we counted at about 80, nearly 80 legislators, and we understand from other accounting that more than 100 of them lost their seats. Either in the primary general election in 2012. ALEC itself says it's down 400 members based on the documents that were published by the Guardian newspaper last month. And so public attention, sunlight, sunshine, focus on ALEC has definitely affected it. It has led to the loss of members, both corporate and legislative.
So last question, I've got about 30 seconds. What do we do? I mean, you're in Wisconsin there. You saw this stuff firsthand, all of these ALEC attacks. What advice do you give folks here in our listening area?
Well, I think that, you know, in your state house, Pennsylvania actually has the most legislators who've left ALEC. And you can find those on our site, ALEC Exposed. And so your voices count. Speaking out, asking your legislators, are you part of ALEC? Will you get out of ALEC? That works. Pennsylvania has the best record in the country from that standpoint. But there's still a lot of ALEC members there who are pushing these bills. And I think the people of Pennsylvania and elsewhere need to stand up and ask these legislators, who do you serve? You know, how are you advancing my interests versus the interests of these out-of-state corporations or foreign corporations that are behind these ALEC bills? And I think people also need to talk to their newspapers and radio stations and TV stations if they're hearing from the ALEC-related think tank that is in Pennsylvania. We have a report on thinktanks.org.
The Commonwealth Foundation.
The Commonwealth Foundation. So if you hear that Commonwealth Foundation cited as an expert, you ought to be very skeptical. You know, they're also peddling this ALEC agenda.
Absolutely great advice, Lisa Graves. Always great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's great talking with you. Let's take a quick break. Right back with the third hour. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
This is why we fight, why we
for the rest of us, Rick Smith.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. By a narrow 51-49% margin, Boeing International Association of Machinists workers traded defined benefit pensions and wage concessions for the promise of continued jobs in the Puget Sound area. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger said the impact of the agreement extends far beyond IAM members who voted Friday. He said the entire region will benefit for decades to come from the economic activity that goes with the production of the new Boeing 777X aircraft. Boeing new hires, though, will be affected for decades to come by giving up defined benefit pensions. IAM members at Boeing will have greater out-of-pocket health care costs and a 4% raise over 8 years. They will also be paid bonuses of $10,000 and another $5,000 in 2020. IAM District 751 President Tom Robluski said that the entire district leadership had recommended a no vote, but Robluski said that the membership has spoken and the union's goal now is to fight to ensure that Boeing lives up to its word to keep the jobs in Washington State. American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. is calling on Congress to immediately repeal the cuts to military and civilian federal pensions that were included in the December budget deal. Cox said Congress made a grievous mistake and should not swap the pension cuts for other harmful cuts, like ending Saturday delivery by the post office. President Obama is talking the talk again about seriously tackling income inequality and empowering workers with collective bargaining laws that work like they're supposed to. Workers, including the 2011 Wisconsin Uprising workers, have heard this rhetoric before. But Obama did not put on his comfortable shoes to walk with Wisconsin workers on the protest lines, as he said in his rhetoric, and workers on the front lines of the struggle for labor rights remain skeptical about what the president is really prepared to do for labor. But the White House says that in 2014, the president's agenda and the State of the Union speech later this month will center around income inequality, what Obama is calling the defining challenge of our time.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from Union-Owned Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Equal Opportunity Lender, doing whatever it takes to meet your business lending needs for new construction, remodeling, or building training facilities. Online at bankoflabor.com.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. We go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't ever give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
We just asking that we have this opportunity to have a fair and free election that free from intimidation, free from threats.
Workers Independent News is the only daily national radio newscast focused on workers and their issues. To keep Workers Independent News and the voices of these workers on the air, donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Well, we're going to start in a couple of weeks with our budget adjustment bill. The first step is we're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions,
right?
Because you divide and conquer.
Well, you know, divide and conquer. That could have been Tom Corbett making that statement. That could have been our governor there saying that to one of the billionaires who was funding his campaign. Just mind-blowing. And like I said, you know, back in 2011, when we were in Wisconsin, the attacks will be here. They're on the doorstep. They're banging around, as they have been for the last couple of years. Only now I think the political will is there. They need the distraction. They need the political cover, you know, to try and get us away from the fact that this governor has been an abysmal failure on so many levels.
Anyway, our quote of the day comes from Wisconsin State Senator Glenn Grothman. And I love this. He was interviewed by the Huffington Post. And he says, right now in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to work 7 days in a row, which is a little ridiculous because all sorts of people want to work 7 days a week. That's the world they're taking us to. And as I wrote on my Facebook page, unions got us the weekend. This guy wants to take them away. Anyway, here to talk a little bit about 2011, all the attacks that went on in Wisconsin, and the aftermath. I've asked Wisconsin State Representative Brett Halsey to come talk to us. Brett, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure, Rick. How you doing, buddy?
I'm gearing up for what's coming because I fear many of the things that happened in Wisconsin in 2011, the testing ground, the place where they tried all this stuff out, is coming here.
Well, and I know our cold weather is heading there, too. We had 25, 35 below wind chill today. It's heading your way, so everybody dress warm and be safe.
No, everybody stay home. They've already canceled my kids' school. They did it around 6 o'clock tonight, canceled school tomorrow because it's going to be cold tomorrow.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. So, but it's like the Walker corporate-funded politics. It's all negative stuff heading your way. Unfortunately, this stuff is ginned up by the corporate lobbyists and the Koch brothers, not Mother Nature. So.
But I look at this idea that we're going to have a seven-day, everybody, you can work 7 days, work every day. In fact, you should never have a day off. Kind of the message that your state senator is sending me.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but Glenn was the one that I saved from the angry mob when he called a bunch of the citizens who had been locked out of their state capitol camping in the February cold. He called them a bunch of slobs because they were, sleeping in tents of the frozen tundra. So I had to rescue him from the angry mob. But he also forgets that, that this whole Sabbath, kind of goes back to the Bible. I mean, it's like not just unions, it was Moses.
Yeah, well, so. Good point. But, here again, this whole idea of being business friendly and bowing at the corporate special, whatever they want, the Koch brothers want something, we're going to get it. We want to screw workers and make sure that they don't have a voice on the job. We're going to do that. It seems to me to be very short-sighted, though.
Well, and the worst thing is it's not working. I mean, every year that Governor Walker has been governor, we've created fewer jobs in Wisconsin. We're creating jobs at about half the rate as the federal. The U.S. economy is less than our surrounding states, and we've dropped from 12th in the nation to somewhere between 37th and 50th, depending on whose statistics you look at. This Walker corporate lobbyist agenda is just not working here and won't work in Pennsylvania either because it's just relying on the pockets of rich people, not putting working people to work.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the more jobs governor here. Governor Corbett is running around the state saying that he's the more jobs governor, more than Wisconsin, more than Wyoming. That's it.
Right, and running around the state is great, but it just doesn't put people to work. And see, what Governor Walker did was he went after the number one employer in the state of Wisconsin, which is the state of Wisconsin. He took $330 million from 130,000 public servants that bargained for, health care and benefits rather than taking pay increases for 50 years. He took that away. And when you take that kind of money out of the economy, in addition to record cuts to our schools, our university, and our job training technical colleges, you take that money out of the economy and you give it to out-of-state corporate interests that don't create jobs. That's one of the reasons economy's been so badly hurt.
So this stuff that's coming, because look, we're going to end up with the paycheck deception, and they obviously want to go after collective bargaining, and they obviously want to push right to work as this stuff moves down the line. And, I look at what happened in Wisconsin where they took collective bargaining rights away from public sector workers. And the question I wanted to ask is, in the aftermath, what has that done for not just the workers but also the citizens of the state?
Well, we're seeing repercussions of large employers doing the same thing from, UW Hospital to Meritor. All major employers across the state are saying, hey, we don't have to look after workers. We don't have to honor good contracts. Frankly, they're just being jerks. I'm a former union vice president and shop steward myself, help organize the union theater club. And these guys are just, you know, they're cutthroat.
It's open season.
It's open season on working families, and we got to fight back. One of the things I'm doing is I'm working on a letter to investigate Walker for health care fraud, because he said the state was broke. He took health care Medicaid away from 22,800 infants, newborn children, and working people. And that may, you know, you can't take $91 million worth of health care away from people saying you're broke, and then a couple months later put money into a rainy day fund saying you created a huge surplus. You know, it's like that's ripping people off.
Well, it's only those people, Brett. I mean, it's those people. You know, that's okay.
Those people are infants and children. You know, we debated this right before Christmas. I said, you know, if Jesus was being born today in Wisconsin, you know, the second coming, in a barn someplace, you know, chances are his parents would be on Badger Care or Medicaid program, and Governor Walker would be thinking about taking away their medicine and health insurance.
Well, at least you've got Badger Care. I mean, here when Governor Corbett took office back in January 2011, the first thing he did is kick 41,000 low-wage workers off of adult basic, much like your Badger Care, and kicked them to the curb.
Well, and one of the things you may want to look at is when Walker sent the letter, and under the Social Security Act and Affordable Care Act, the state has to maintain effort to provide health insurance for many of these working family, and you can't just take that health insurance away. You have to provide maintenance of effort unless the state has a budget crisis. Like I said, Walker said we were broke. You know, there's been rate of the pants on fire lie, along with about, you know, many of the things. He's like the number one pants on fire false liar, according to PolitiFact Wisconsin.
Well, our governor was at least smart enough to create a crisis. He went and gave away, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in potential tax revenue to the Marcellus Shale people. We're actually pulling West Virginia down when it comes to taxing Marcellus Shale. He maintains the Delaware loophole where huge amounts of profit go out. And, you know, he's given away hundreds of millions of dollars a year to big corporations through handouts. So he's created the economic crisis that you said would be a justification for stealing health care from the least among us.
Yeah, Governor Walker just didn't know the difference between agency requests and actual state budget. You know, he thought the agency request of $3.6 billion was deficit. I was like, no, that's their Christmas list. You know, what the budgets are about is saying no to a Christmas list that you can't afford.
And it's about priorities. And, you know, our governor, the priority is hand money to big business and to the very wealthy and screw kids and the most vulnerable.
Right. And that's why my Get Wisconsin Working Again amendment is $2.1 billion. To restore funding for, you know, health care and retirement for those workers is taken away, put money back in our UW and public school system, put money back in our job training, technical colleges, $700 million for clean energy. And what we want to do is tax frac sand so that we're creating the frac sand that's going to your Marcellus Shale
for
the Saudi Arabia frac sand. So and it's creating all kinds of problems, you know, with strip mines all over the place. So, you know, but it didn't pass. But of course, if I'm governor, that'll be the cornerstone of my budget.
So you're running for governor?
Never can tell. I've got a red convertible, so not exactly convertible weather right now. But I'm going to wait until we.
Well, you're a tough guy. You're a tough guy. I wouldn't be surprised if you were driving around 25 below weather with the top down.
You know, I was down out in about 30. It wasn't bad. I had the half of the ear flaps on and the goggles, but you know, the 30, 25 below, I was like.
So on the personal level, do you take the out to the water and do the ice fishing and all that?
You know, I've done that. I was out skiing with my dog today. Took her for a run, but you know, it's just at 35 below. You sort of stay at the crosswind level and try not to go upwind too much. But I ski raced in college, and my coach used to say, there's no such thing as too cold, just not enough clothes.
There you go. Or not enough fat.
You know, I
try to burn as much fat as I can, but I'm behind in that department.
There you go. So last question I've got for you, and looking at back to 2011, all the things that went on there, and the experience that you've had, the lessons that you've learned, what do you give us as the attacks begin here? What pearls of wisdom, what thoughts, what ideas?
You got to go to, you got to find your reasonable Republican. You got to get enough votes to win and try to pick off, not all Republicans are these Tea Party lunatics, And some of them are, former working people, former union people, and really focus on trying to get enough votes to stop the onslaught.
Yeah, and to me, it comes down to educating the populace and getting people engaged in the process, to kind of take us back to the days of FDR. And, today is the anniversary of his Four Freedoms speech, where he talked about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear.
Right.
That didn't happen because he was a great guy who just wanted to give a great speech. That happened because millions of people pushed for that. People were behind him pushing for that. We need those people again.
Well, and nothing to fear but fear itself. And you got to go right at, got to have a coordinated strategy. You got to have everybody on, because once they start taking, these rights, the reason I organized, helped organize the Union at the Air Club. We had 42 people laid off of 1 hour's notice, a banker's box, a security guard. And, one of those people committed suicide. So you got to remind people why you need unions to stand up to bad employers.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Brett, I appreciate the time. I appreciate it. It's always great having you on the program.
Thanks. Stay warm, and people can go to brettforus.org if they want to know more.
We will make sure we put a link up so folks have that chance. Brett Halsey, appreciate the time.
Stay warm.
Thanks. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
What a Christmas little Bastrop had. It's still a mystery how Santa Claus got it down the chimney, but Bastrop got a present boys dream about. A big honking steel-clad war toy called MRAP. But Bastrop is not a 6-year-old boy, and an MRAP is not a toy. Bastrop is a Texas county of some 75,000 people, and MRAP stands for Mine Resistant Ambush Protected. It's a heavily armored military vehicle, one of several versions of war tanks that have become the hot must-have playthings of police departments all across the country. Are the good people of Bastrop facing some imminent terrorist threat that warrants military equipment? No, it's a very pleasant, laid-back place. And while the county is named for a 19th-century land developer from the Netherlands who was wanted for embezzlement in his home country, the relatively few crimes in Bastrop today don't rise above the level of routine police work. Even the sheriff's department, which is the proud owner of the MRAP, says it doesn't have a particular use for the war machine, but, quote, it's here if we need it. Well, yeah, but that same feeble rationale would apply if the county decided to get an atom bomb. You just never know when a big mushroom cloud might come in handy. The Pentagon, which gave the MRAP to Bastrop and our sprawling Department of Homeland Security, are haphazardly spreading war equipment, war techniques, and a war mentality to what are supposed to be our community's peacekeepers and crime solvers. This is Jim Hightower saying, having the technology and the mindset for military actions, local authorities will find excuses to substitute them for honest police work. turning common citizens into suspects and enemies. As a spokesman for the Bastrop Sheriff's Department said of the MRAP, with today's society, there's no way the thing won't be used. How comforting is that? Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yeah, he's a Republican, and he wants you to work 7 days a week. Watching to work every single day. And I got to be honest, I can't believe that Wisconsin, that a state has a law that says you need to have a day off. I don't, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Pennsylvania has that law. I don't think there's any law that says you can't work every single day of your life until you die. I think it's pretty amazing that Wisconsin has something on its books that says, you know what? You got to have a day off. You got to be able to spend a day with your family. It's kind of like I look at this Grothman quote that, well, you know, all sorts of people want to work 7 days a week. Do you? I mean, honestly, answer the question. Do you want to work 7 days a week? There's a huge difference. I guess the first part of it is there's a huge difference between, you know, I want to work 7 days a week and I have to work 7 days a week. I mean, stop and think about that for a second. It's fairly mind-blowing. And I guess the other part of it is if you're working 7 days a week, how's that 40-hour work week thing work? You know, just a thought. Now, I remember there have been a couple of weeks in my life that I have worked before I started doing this. I had worked 7 days a week because you got double time on Saturday, or time and a half on Saturday, double time on Sunday. But there's part of me that goes, you know, I think it's probably smart policy to make sure everyone has a day off. In fact, I'd like to see men have 2 days off. A couple of reasons. One, more time with your family, a stronger, because, you know, I believe, as one of those hippy-dippy liberals, I believe in family values. I think that if you have children, you should spend a little time with them. I think that if you have your parents or grandparents, you should help take care of them. And you should have the time to be able to do that. But also, from a policy standpoint, the idea that, you know, maybe by having opportunities for more people to have jobs, we get people off unemployment. And I know that's heresy. How dare we want to have policies that would encourage job growth, that aren't handing out huge, obscene amounts of money to these big corporations and to the very well-to-do, who do such wonderful things with them. I mean, I think of all the money that we, through our tax code, have given the Koch brothers and the wonderful things that they've done with it, like by our government, like spend millions of dollars, or $400 million in one election cycle, to influence policy that benefits who? Oh, yeah, them. I always love Americans for prosperity. Well, whose prosperity are you talking about? Certainly not mine, because the agenda that you push, horribly destructive. The agenda that you push tried to steal my vote. The agenda that you push continues to reduce the top tax rates and eliminate, you know, taxes on the very well-to-do, while the rest of us, we're the ones either with limited services, limited opportunity, or higher taxes. And my favorite, higher fees. Your driver's license, you know, if you want a fishing license, you want a hunting license, all the fees going up. So that people can say, well, I didn't raise taxes. And you go right down the list. I mean, this bill that Seth Grove has to eliminate and block any municipality's ability to pass a paid sick day or a paid leave ordinance. That's ALEC legislation. They passed that in Florida. It's also in places like Wisconsin and Mississippi and Michigan. He's not a genius. That right there is not Magellan. He didn't find that one on his own. And the whole idea, and understand, there's going to be a lot of money coming in to stop any increase in the minimum wage here. Earlier in the program, we talked with Mike Sterla, who said, you know, that's one of the things they want to go after, raising the minimum wage up to $10.10 an hour over the next 2 years and 60 days. Incrementally raise it, but also put an index in there. So that as inflation goes up, the wage goes up. So we have to keep having this fight all the time. Reality is what it is. We set the minimum wage, and you know what? People figure it out. But you do know Alex behind a whole ton of things. One of my favorite ones, and I talked about this before I went on vacation, that they're trying to destroy all renewable energy standards. They're trying to destroy all of the renewable energy. And my favorite part of it was they're trying to get mandate people like me who have solar power, solar panels on my house. They're trying to tax me and say, well, that energy that you generate that goes back to the grid that helps the power company, since they're not expanding their capacity, because it one helps alleviate, you know, because you're creating energy that you're using and then you're selling some back. We're going to charge you to use the transmission lines that your tax dollars built. I mean, it's masterful business-friendly mentality that our tax dollars created a system that we then gave them, and then they're going to charge us for helping them. It would be like me, and this is a great example. It would be like me over the weekend, when it was snowy and icy and cold, and it'd be tomorrow when it's supposed to be unforgivably cold. It would be like me pulling over to someone who broke down on the side of the road because their battery froze up and saying, I'll give you a jump. And then after I've given them a jump, saying, well, you're going to have to pay me. It's kind of the same thing in my view. And, you know, I go back to that time that we were in Wisconsin, and it was, I remember it vividly. And I remember as we were, because we had the opportunity, thanks to Brett Halsey, to actually broadcast from his office in the Capitol and actually used the state of Wisconsin's Wi-Fi. but, you know, we were able to broadcast out of there. And I remember at the time saying, look, we're here for one specific reason. We're here to see what's going on because we're bringing it back because you know it's coming. It's like the playbook started in Wisconsin. They said, here you go. This is the testing ground because they controlled the legislature, both chambers and the governor's mansion by huge amounts. They had total and absolute and complete control. And I remember saying, we're here to see if there's a way to stop this, if there's a way to slow this down. And what we need to be doing organizationally, what we need to be doing to get people into the streets, to get people active, engaged, informed. How do we stop this ugliness from getting here? When we went to Ohio for the SB5 fight, when they tried to take collective bargaining away from public sector workers, we were there saying, look, we're here because it's coming our way. It's going to be here. We need to be preparing. We need to be prepared when it hits. Well, it's coming. Because now, like a rat cornered, they're looking at this election season going, uh-oh, there's a very real chance we're going to lose the governor's mansion. And if that happens, all of the insanity that we wanted, all of the privatization schemes, all of the ALEC schemes, all of the pro-corporate, anti-worker nonsense that we've been looking at, it's all going to go away. because no Democratic governor, none of the 12 or 30 or 50 people who've thrown their hat in, maybe I'm going to run for governor, I don't know yet, but none of the mass of people who are running for governor, not even the insane ones, are going to allow the Alec agenda and the Koch brother agenda to pass here in Pennsylvania. So they're like cornered rats going, uh-oh, we got to do something. And I say this next 3 to 6 months, at least this next 3 months, is when a lot of this insanity could happen, when a lot of the craziness could ensue, especially this next month or so. Because I think Mike Sterlo was right, they need that distraction. They need a victory, if you will. So they can say, oh, see, he won this. Even if it was horrible for people, he still won. It's still an accomplishment, which is a lot better than what they've gotten to this point. I guess that you could call the transportation bill something of an accomplishment, even though it was horribly underfunded. And there was a lot in it that I got to be honest, not thrilled with. The assaults on prevailing wage just blow my mind. But that was the pound of flesh that they end up stealing away. So it's going to be interesting the next month or two. It's going to be very interesting to see how this turns out. Hopefully as it moves to the summer, maybe some of the insanity slows down, because I think we're getting tired of it. And one of the things I've often said, none of this stuff changes until the folks who are holding the levers of power believe that we're going to storm the Bastille and put heads on sticks. Now, I'm using that in a figurative sense, not literally. I don't want people rushing into the Capitol and putting heads on sticks. But they have to be fearful that the potential is there. And the wealth class of this country has to be fearful as well, that there will be a revolt against what they're doing. And that only comes with active, informed, educated voters. People who are going to say, what? You're going to try and put a barrier between me and my vote? Not going to happen. And we need to vote for politicians who are going to stand up for us. And I'm hoping, you know, again, I'm always hopeful, that this year is that year. That this year is the year that those lever pullers who say, I'm a Republican, but I've been a Republican. Granted, they're doing all kind of crazy stuff, but I still can't vote for them because that's what I am. Hopefully those people go, wait a second, I need to be a little more judicious with my vote. Much like Democrats were with a number of the candidates of the past. I mean, I wasn't a huge Clinton fan. It's going to be interesting. And we're going to be here through it all. I've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll talk with Evan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Right back. Stick around.
Intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. By a narrow 51-49% margin, Boeing International Association of Machinists workers traded defined benefit pensions and wage concessions for the promise of continued jobs in the Puget Sound area. IAM President Tom Buffenbarger said the impact of the agreement extends far beyond IAM members who voted Friday. He said the entire region will benefit for decades to come from the economic activity that goes with the production of the new Boeing 777X aircraft. Boeing new hires, though, will be affected for decades to come by giving up defined benefit pensions. IAM members at Boeing will have greater out-of-pocket health care costs and a 4% raise over 8 years. They will also be paid bonuses of $10,000 and another $5,000 in 2020. IAM District 751 President Tom Robluski said that the entire district leadership had recommended a no vote, but Robluski said that the membership has spoken and the union's goal now is to fight to ensure that Boeing lives up to its word to keep the jobs in Washington State.
American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. is calling on Congress to immediately repeal the cuts to military and civilian federal pensions that were included in the December budget deal. Cox said Congress made a grievous mistake and should not swap the pension cuts for other harmful cuts, like ending Saturday delivery by the post office. President Obama is talking the talk again about seriously tackling income inequality and empowering workers with collective bargaining laws that work like they're supposed to. Workers, including the 2011 Wisconsin Uprising workers, have heard this rhetoric before. But Obama did not put on his comfortable shoes to walk with Wisconsin workers on the protest lines, as he said in his rhetoric, and workers on the front lines of the struggle for labor rights remain skeptical about what the president is really prepared to do for labor. But the White House says that in 2014, the president's agenda and the State of the Union speech later this month will center around income inequality, what Obama is calling the defining challenge of our time.
Workers Independent News is brought to you with support from Union-Owned Bank of Labor, a division of Brotherhood Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Equal Opportunity Lender, doing whatever it takes to meet your business lending needs for new construction, remodeling, or building training facilities. Online at bankoflabor.com.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. We go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't ever give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
We're just asking that we have this opportunity to have a fair and free election that free from intimidation, free from threats.
Workers Independent News is the only daily national radio newscast focused on workers and their issues. To keep Workers Independent News and the voices of these workers on the air, donate now at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. Not a good day in Darth Cheney world as the daughter of Darth. Well, she pulled out, not running for senator. Oh, senator, oh, sad. And such a good campaign she was running, too. I mean, just one of those wonderful things you'd want to teach in school. Anyway, let's go to Washington D.C. find out what's going on in the country and around the world. Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Alan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much.
So Liz has dropped out. What a sad, sad thing.
I know, and she says it's for having an ill family member, but she couldn't have made it, and we just think that's an excuse. I mean, she may have an ill family member, but she also couldn't have made it.
Well, I mean, the fact that she doesn't really live in Wyoming, doesn't that have something to do with it? The fact that the whole false application for the fishing license because she doesn't actually live in the state, maybe just something?
Well, that's right. I mean, she supposedly moved her family there, but she was only living, you know what that was like. Yeah. I mean, and anybody with 2 ounces of sense did, and that's why she didn't make it.
Yeah.
In addition to the fact she went after a very popular governor. And tried to run, I mean, governor, sorry, senator, and tried to run to the right of him.
Well, I mean,
not that he was, there was much left to
there's not much
know.
Further to the right you can go.
Right. Exactly.
Wow. Well, it's fun to mock her anyway, because she's fun to always give you.
And then she got into that battle with her sister about gay marriage. That yeah. wasn't smart.
See, that's fun.
Well, it was fun for us.
Absolutely.
I'm sure Thanksgiving and Christmas wasn't too much fun for them.
That would be fun to be a fly on the wall.
Can you imagine?
Or do you think? I mean, because I look at this stuff, and do you really think that it's really an issue? I mean, you know, I've seen this stuff where you go, you know, this face they put on in public really isn't the person that they are. It's all a charade. It's all just a game.
Well, that often happens with a lot of people, but. I have a feeling that this one, the gay issue, was a big issue for them. Otherwise, I don't think she would have been vocal about it.
Yeah. Do you think we get by that ever? Do you think there's ever a chance where we go, you know what, I don't really care anymore?
I think there are some parts of the country, just like on this marijuana stuff, where people say, I just don't care.
Yeah. And I see in Utah, they have the Supreme Court stepped in there, right?
The United States Supreme Court stepped in on the Utah gay marriage issue, and it's now going to go to the 10th Circuit Court, and they're going to discuss whether, in fact, they are going to take up the case. They're going to take it on fast track as to whether it's constitutional or not in Utah. My guess is it'll go back up to the Supreme Court, another gay marriage case.
Yeah. Again, look at all this time, energy, all this effort we're, in my view, wasting on an issue that should be already settled. Just keep your minds, keep your laws, keep your hands out of people's bedrooms and out of their lives and move along. Maybe if we spent this kind of energy on getting people jobs and getting back to work and maybe making sure that kids have food and books and making sure that we have an economy that works for everybody, not just a few, Maybe that would be energy better spent. What do you think?
Right. And maybe if we got some pre-K going so that kids can actually learn some things, maybe we put more money into pre-K than we do into jail, things like that. Maybe that would be useful.
Yeah, but there's not enough profit in education yet. As soon as they privatize education, then you'll see money going into it hand over fist. But until we destroy the education monster and privatize it, well, I think you're gonna continue to see more money into prisons because prisons have profit, right?
Prisons have a lot of profit, and prison enterprise that often cuts out unions does as well.
Yeah. But the thing to me is, today, I guess, still no unemployment extension?
No unemployment extension, and they need the 60 votes to get it to the floor of the Senate. But because of the weather, many senators could not get in, so Harry Reid was forced to postpone the vote.
So while that's happening, we're not seeing millions of dollars going into our economy, which is probably causing more unemployment.
That's exactly right. And you have people who really do depend on this, as you know.
See, but here's the thing that gets me. Why were they allowed to leave Washington to begin with? Why were they allowed to have Christmas when they were screwing 1.3 million people out of their Christmas?
Well, supposedly they were going to come in this week and pass something, and then it was even going to be retroactive, and people would have, they would have been insecure, but for 1 week, essentially. But that did not happen, as you know, and doesn't look like it's going to happen, at least in the next couple of days. Now, it is true that it is a bipartisan bill. Dean Heller from Nevada, a Republican, is co-sponsoring that bill.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, at the end of the day, these folks need jobs, and I've got a radical idea. Why don't we stop focusing on extending unemployment and start focusing on full employment policies as a matter of government? So you know what? If you can't find a job after 26 weeks, government will be the employer of last resort, and you will continue your unemployment. We'll find things to do. I mean, to me, it's ludicrous that we don't have full employment policies. Because if you did that, I think you would tighten up the job market and wages would actually go up a little bit.
Well, yes. I mean, it's just like if you raise the minimum wage, people spend more money, et cetera.
So you're not one of those, are you?
What do you mean?
One of those people who say, well, we should raise the minimum wage. I actually had a guy this weekend say that, look at me in the face, as I'm wearing my Union Yes t-shirt. He's going, you're not one of those people who want $15 an hour for minimum wage.
He really said that. I can't believe it. I mean, the studies, I think the economic studies are pretty clear on that.
Yeah. And I said, it affects you. You know that. No, it doesn't. It just means my hamburger's going to cost more. I go, no, if the guy at the bottom's making $15 an hour, you'll see that ripple effect up. So the $16 that you're making will probably be $17 or $18. So you'll get a bump as well, and that's what the business elites don't want. Well, we don't want that upward pressure because we might have to share some of our profits.
Pretty amazing, huh? Well, that people would even think that.
Oh, I went back to driving on the weekends because I miss driving. So I get to interact with a lot of different people who normally I wouldn't. It's amazing to me what conservative talk radio has done to the minds of the working class of this country. I have guys who spew Rush Limbaugh type rhetoric all day long. And then all the time. And you try to explain to them how exactly what you said is exactly what you were complaining about just a second ago. Guy asked me the other day, he goes, wow, you don't really think unions are necessary today. I go, weren't you just complaining about the condition of your equipment? Weren't you just complaining about your hours, your wages, your benefits? Weren't you complaining about all of that? Well, unions are how you solve those problems.
I always say the union, the people that brought you the weekend.
And did you see in Wisconsin, the guy who wants to take your weekend away?
I did not.
Oh, it's masterful. This Senator Glenn Grotham. I'm sure you've heard of him. He's been the face of most of the attacks that have gone on against workers. He said on one of the radio programs out there, and actually told Huffington Post, that right now, here's the quote, right now in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to work 7 days in a row, which is a little ridiculous because there's all sorts of people out there who want to work 7 days in a row. He wants to put forth a piece of legislation that would change and repeal the state law that requires at least one 24-hour rest period per calendar week.
You're kidding. I mean, it doesn't even sound like he's biblical.
No.
Even the Bible says that.
No, not anymore. No. See, the face is off now. The mask is off. We now know the agenda. The agenda is the lowest wages and the most exploitable workers we can possibly get. And understand, this is another piece of ALEC legislation. It seems like Wisconsin, which used to be the hotbed of progressivism, you know, 100 years ago, and we got a lot of great things, first state in the country to pass workers' compensation. Now it's the other side of this. It's this right-wing insaniac haven where this kind of stuff, where it started.
Well, I mean, it's just, you wonder, do people who believe this kind of stuff have any basis in reality, or are they just so self-absorbed that they don't think of others?
Well, they're just in the pockets. And you know what I would say? I would say, fine, you start with the legislature first. The legislature will work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Start with your office. Start with your family. Don't screw mine. It's ludicrous to me. And this whole, you know, all of this stuff just frustrates me to no end.
It frustrates me, and what frustrates me is that a Congress, through all the snow and rain, couldn't get it together to help people raise, or to help Congress raise the money to pay people and extend unemployment. I just, honestly, it is beyond me how these people think this way.
But don't you think they've kind of won the messaging battle? Because I've heard a lot of the people that I deal with say, well, you know, if you're unemployed that long, there's got to be something wrong with you. You're just lazy. Or like our governor here in Pennsylvania said, you were lazy, and then you were drug addicts, or you're alcoholics or whatever. Because I look at it, I think the messaging around this has been masterful by the business community, by the right wing of this country, that if you can't find a job, there's something wrong with you.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure. I know that's what you're hearing, but I actually don't. I think most people can see through that. I really do.
I hope you're right.
And I think people like you help people do that. But, you know, I know you think people sort of buy the talk radio line. I don't know. I mean, I think there is definitely a segment of people that do that. But I think most people, if you sit down and talk to them, they see it for what it is.
Well, again, maybe it's just the people that I run into on a daily basis. Maybe I live in the wrong world. Maybe I should move to your world.
Come on down.
Well, you know what it is. So what else is going on in D.C.?
The big deal, of course, is the situation with the minimum wage. Another vote, I think it was supposed to take place later today, but again, the weather prevented it, on the security provisions in collecting of the information for the health care law. Of course, that didn't happen, but this is just another ISA attempt to do something with the health care law. So that happened or didn't happen today. I must say, good that it did not. Right. Also, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid have said that health care spending has actually gone down. It went down to 17.2% of the gross domestic product. $2.8 trillion is what we spend in health care. And the GDP unit actually grew. Of course, it didn't trickle down, as Ronald Reagan would say, but the GDP did grow 4.6% this year.
Yeah, but I got dumped on, all right. Other question. Bernie Sanders wrote a letter to the NSA asking if Congress had been spied on.
They don't want to answer.
No. I was going to ask, has there been an answer?
No.
So the question is have they been doing that?
Well, I would say it's a 10-pound Robin fat. I mean, honestly, if you're the NSA and you have the capacity to spy on people, why would you ever miss the opportunity to spy on Congress?
Yeah. Well, so the NSA is now the new J. Edgar Hoover, then?
To say the least, yes. J. Edgar Hoover would be proud of the NSA.
So Snowden, hero or villain?
Well, I think he's a hero.
I'm with you.
And as I think Julian Assange is.
Yeah, well, so should we do what Chuck Schumer says and make him come back and stand trial?
You know, Chuck Schumer, I happen to like him, but he has a blind eye about several things, and that is one of them. And one of them is just, you know, he's just so security conscious that he forgets about human rights and forgets about the fact of what these people, both Julian Assange and Snowden, did for us, which is to make us open to the fact that the government was running roughshod on all of our lives and privacy.
Yep. And, you know, as my wife pointed out to me today, because I've just been scratching my head and going, what is wrong with society? And is there a pill I can take that will just make me mindless, like what appears to be the rest of society who are hung up on the bearded people, the schmuck controversy with the duck people? I don't really care what guys with these idiots on TV with a beard.
By the way, have you seen that duck thing?
I've never actually watched it.
Oh, you got to, you can download it or whatever. You can watch. You got to see it once.
It doesn't, just on its face, it doesn't appear to be anything of any value whatsoever. But then again, the vast majority of what's on television has no value in my view, which is why we don't watch TV in my house. But, you know, I look at this, and to me it was a manufactured thing. I think they did it all on purpose so that they could sell more guns. Bottom line, pretty simple. Because the little news story that didn't really get told is simultaneously they released a gun line.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. And I'm also not surprised that the Defense Authorization Act kind of went hand in hand with it. I mean, there wasn't much talk about that at all. What we were blinded with was the shiny thing or the bearded thing.
Yes.
That is what it is. Welcome to our media.
Well, thank you very much. Another quick thing. There's three international stories kind of boiling. Syria looks like they are going to invite Iran to the talks, says Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations. There are going to be, it looks like, in Iraq, we are agreeing to help, but no boots on the ground, and, of course, South Sudan continuing to kind of be the mess that it is.
Yeah, and any hope there? I know you're intimately involved with what's going on.
Well, I'm not so sure that it's such a good idea to bring planes, which Bashir, their former enemy, has decided to do, and troops in. I think it's going to further complicate a messy situation.
Great. Just what we need. Great way to start off the new year, Alan. Thank you.
Not a good way. I agree with you 100%, and we'll be in touch tomorrow.
All righty. Thanks so much, Alan Ratner, Talk
Thank
Radio
you.
News Service. Quick break. Thanks so much. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
What a Christmas little Bastrop had. It's still a mystery how Santa Claus got it down the chimney, but Bastrop got a present boys dream about. A big honking steel-clad war toy called M-Rap. But Bastrop is not a six-year-old boy, and an M-Rap is not a toy. Bastrop is a Texas county of some 75,000 people, and MRAP stands for Mine Resistant Ambush Protected. It's a heavily armored military vehicle. one of several versions of war tanks that have become the hot must-have playthings of police departments all across the country. Are the good people of Bastrop facing some imminent terrorist threat that warrants military equipment? No, it's a very pleasant, laid-back place. And while the county is named for a 19th-century land developer from the Netherlands who was wanted for embezzlement in his home country, the relatively few crimes in Bastrop today don't rise above the level of routine police work. Even the sheriff's department, which is the proud owner of the MRAP, says it doesn't have a particular use for the war machine, but, quote, it's here if we need it. Well, yeah, but that same feeble rationale would apply if the county decided to get an atom bomb. You just never know when a big mushroom cloud might come in handy. The Pentagon, which gave the MRAP to Bastrop and our sprawling Department of Homeland Security, are haphazardly spreading war equipment, war techniques, and a war mentality to what are supposed to be our community's peacekeepers and crime solvers. This is Jim Hightower saying, having the technology and the mindset for military actions, local authorities will find excuses to substitute them for honest police work, turning common citizens into suspects and enemies. As a spokesman for the Bastrop Sheriff's Department said of the MRAP, with today's society, there's no way the thing won't be used. How comforting is that?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and a hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. Great to be back after a much needed vacation here forward. Lots of stuff coming up. I mean, as the Pennsylvania legislature comes back, as Congress gets back into action, lots of stuff to be going over this next couple of days. The unemployment thing, I think, is huge. And to me, one of those things, it's about priorities. You look at this, the fact that things that benefit we the people don't seem to get done. I mean, we still don't have the extension for unemployment. We still don't have SNAP benefits. Congratulations, gridlock has defunded all of that. And this is where I go back to, you know, we have to make these decisions at the ballot box, which is why you see so much effort put into denying some of us that access to the ballot box. It's just, well, it's frustrating. Well, let's finish it up with something even a little more depressing. The fact of the matter is, according to the Sloan Center, among adults age 50-plus who are retired, a third of them report that they did not feel that they had a choice except to retire. Feeling like retirement was not a choice is more common among younger retirees, with 54% of retirees under 65 saying that they had no choice but to retire, compared to 23% over 65. That's because they couldn't find jobs. There weren't jobs out there. And we've allowed this kind of discrimination to go on. Sad. I mean, just, and for me, I look at this and I go, we should be encouraging people to retire so we get folks out of the job market so that younger people can take those jobs and start their lives and get the engine moving again. But imagine, you know, if you're in your early 50s, what do you do? Still can't get Medicaid or Medicare. But that's a huge number. 54% under 65 feel that they had no choice whatsoever. Sad. Sad stuff. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. Would be interested in your comments, thoughts, questions, ideas on how we stop the Koch brother assaults. Anything on your mind. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great night.
been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, and...